Okay, good morning. And I'd like to call the June 13th Board of Trustees meeting to order. And I'm going to turn to Board Secretary Stephen Fletcher for meeting protocol.
Thank you very much. Mike was way up there. So good morning, everyone. Welcome to our June Board of Trustees meeting here in Traverse City. Just a reminder, really, that today's agenda is filled with several significant action items of university business. There are also several speakers, including some of those who have driven up here for public participation and are on Zoom as well. A framework up front in the event of a disruption that prevents the board from conducting business or the members of the public from hearing or observing the meeting, we will recess or adjourn the meeting. If the meeting is recessed, the board will meet via Zoom within 10 minutes of the recess occurring, and regrettably, there would be no opportunity for public comment at that stage. Thank you, President.
Okay, thank you. So at this time, I want to call for a motion to approve the agenda for today.
So moved. Support.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The agenda is approved. I'm going to ask for a motion to approve the April 11th and April 25th 2025 meeting minutes.
So moved.
Second. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The minutes are approved. Well, good morning, everyone, and it's wonderful to be here in Traverse City for this month's meeting and our Board of Trustees retreat. And before I begin my report today, I want to acknowledge the passing of former Michigan State University First Lady Dolores Wharton last weekend. Mrs. Wharton was perhaps best known as a vigorous and influential advocate for the arts, including during her years on our campus during President Clifton Wharton's tenure from 1970 to 1978. She served on art organization boards from the Detroit Institute of Arts, which we visited on our Spartan bus tour just a few weeks ago, and the Michigan Council for the Arts, to the Museum of Modern Art in New York, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Of course, a beautiful and prominent monument to the Wharton's advocacy remains with us on campus in the form of our Wharton Center for Performing Arts. And like her husband, Mrs. Wharton broke racial and gender barriers as a member of organizational and corporate boards, including for companies like Phillips Petroleum, Kellogg Company, and Gannett. She was such a powerful presence, such an unforgettable personality. And I'd like to start with a brief moment of silence to remember Dolores Duncan Wharton. Thank you. Well, we've had a great visit to Traverse City this week, experiencing our many collaborative efforts to build community and tackle big challenges for the citizens of this region and the state of Michigan. And I want to thank everyone who hosted us or visited with us, including President Nisley at Northwestern Michigan College in welcoming us. He spoke of the important partnership that MSU President John Hanna established 74 years ago with the Northwestern Michigan College. He talked about their emphasis at the college there on air, land, and water as he talked about the programs that they have around drones and viticulture and the Great Lakes Maritime. And we had a chance to experience some of that over the past few days. The vibrant innovators that we and entrepreneurs that we had a chance to meet with at 20 Fathoms was one of the highlights for me on the visit. Also, our College of Human Medicine's impressive street medicine program in this community was showcased the other day. And our business stakeholders at Black Star Farms and the Spartans and community partners who joined us for a wonderful tour on the West Bay, highlighted by remarks from MSU water researcher Joan Rose. And I'm very much looking forward to hearing from Dr. Rose here shortly as part of our this morning's program. Speaking of research, MSU recently had the privilege of opening the Mackinac Policy Conference with a panel about the importance of federally supported university research. Such research is, of course, under threat from federal cuts. But our panelists, MSU pediatrician Dr. Mona Hanna, Henry Ford Health MSU cancer researcher Dr. Howard Crawford, and former financial executive Matt Elliott, who co-chairs our Green and White Council, did an excellent job highlighting what we stand to lose if we were to see a dismantling of the partnership between the federal government and the great research universities across our nation. From ensuring clean water to making progress in the fight against cancer to retaining top talent, all of this could be at risk. History shows that together, research universities and the federal government catalyze innovation. And today, thanks to that partnership, universities like Michigan State stand as irreplaceable components of the nation's innovative ecosystem. I could cite numerous examples, but today I'll just note how pleased I was to see MSU ranked as a top 40 patent-granting institution by the National Academy of Inventors. We moved up 13 spots with 60 utility patents granted, up from 45 the previous year. And globally, MSU rose 20 spots to number 57. Thanks to our amazing community of innovators, MSU has been listed in the top 100 since 2013, when the NAI began publishing the report. Spartan innovators have registered more than 3,300 inventions over the years, including revolutionizing cancer treatment and pioneering a life-saving race car safety device. So there's a lot at stake here, which is why we continue to monitor and assess the shifting federal landscape. Thank you to our government relations team, which continues to advocate for federal support through contacts with lawmakers and through our peer associations. And thank you to all the Spartans and friends who have lent their voices to this cause, including by contacting their congresspersons directly. As we prepare to approve next year's university budget and set tuition rates today, we're mindful of the financial challenges posed by federal cuts. But as I've said previously, our primary budgetary pressures come not just from changes occurring at the federal government, but from existing structural deficits that must be addressed. From the beginning of my tenure, I've made it a top priority to comprehensively assess Michigan State's financial health. We've looked closely at our budget model and the state's appropriations formula and have examined stress points available reserves, and forecasted operating budget trends. This work has built on the efforts of our budget office, which has been exploring structural improvements for more than 2 years. Following my spring 2024 listening and learning tour, I began conversations with my leadership team in the fall, and then with our deans early this spring. We reached the difficult conclusion of implementing a 9% budget reduction to the general fund over the next 2 years, 6% this coming year and 3% the following year. This will require sacrifices across the university, and as I've said, my own office will start with the full 9% cut this coming year, followed by additional cuts the following year. Administrative units and colleges submitted their budget plans last week, and what we're seeing includes proposed cuts to things like external contracts, hiring, travel allotments, and other budget areas before looking at employment considerations. I wish I could spare our community from this difficult work, and we will do our best to support our people. But ultimately, we must take the necessary strategic decisions for the long-term success of Michigan State University. And as we work to rebalance finances while continuing to move the university forward, I'm very pleased to note that we're on the way to closing out a record-setting fundraising year. As of June 10th, we'd raised $340 million this year, mobilizing more than 63,400 donors and exceeding our annual goal. And of course, earlier this year, we launched our $4 billion Uncommon Will, Far Better World comprehensive campaign, the most ambitious in Michigan State University's history. I've been pleased to be part of our advancement and alumni outreach, meeting people across the country and as far away as Japan and South Korea just last month. and even on the bay here last evening, meeting with many alums and donors who are proud to be Spartans. And I can't say enough about the generosity of Spartans and friends who are investing in our future. Those include the MSU Research Foundation, which recently designated $75 million over the next 8 years to support university research and innovation. So thanks to all who have or will financially support Michigan State University. While we look ahead to future opportunities, we're extremely fortunate to welcome our four key new leaders to our community. Pending board approval, Laura Lee McIntyre will be our next provost and executive vice president for academic affairs starting August the 4th. She has such palpable energy and will bring outstanding experience to Michigan State. As dean of the College of Education at the University of Oregon, for example, she built a collaborative culture leading to new academic programs, more robust student advising services, stronger graduate enrollment, increased student scholarships, and more research awards. Dr. McIntyre is also an accomplished scholar known for her work in early childhood autism, family-centered interventions, and family-school partnerships for children with disabilities. I'm very confident that she will strengthen our academic enterprise and be a tremendous asset to our community. I also want to take this opportunity to thank Interim Provost and Executive Vice President for Academic Affairs, Thomas Yaitsko, for his dedicated service over more than 2.5 years, probably closer to 3 years. His impact will be felt for a long time, having appointed over 13 deans and vice provosts. Thomas has led implementations and integrations from the MSU College of Law to the transition to our new student information system. He's fostered cross-college collaboration and promoted one team across colleges and units, and has strengthened relationships with academic governance. As a prominent figure in our student success, he led MSU through a successful 10-year accreditation process and recently helped launch our general education modernization process. And it makes me very happy to acknowledge Dr. Yaitsko's many contributions by recognizing him going forward with the title of Michigan State Provost Emeritus. Please join me in thanking him. Thomas, thank you for your dedication to Michigan State University. At the same time, I'm happy to welcome two new deans pending board approval. Thomas Stubblefield has been selected to lead the College of Arts and Letters. He brings excellent experience from College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Rhode Island, where he is Professor of Art and Art History and Associate Dean. And I also want to congratulate and welcome Matt Dom, who's been selected to lead the College of Agriculture and Natural Resources, where he has done a great job as interim dean for the last year. Many of you have gotten to know Matt as the director of our nationally acclaimed packaging program, and I am confident that he will take our College of Ag and Natural Resources to new heights. Finally, just last week, we introduced our new athletics director. When I set out on the search, I told the board I was going to aim big, and I appreciate that they supported me in running the search with the freedom to go land a top-tier athletics director. And top-tier is what we're getting in Jay Batt as Michigan State's 21st Director of Athletics. Jay is a visionary leader with a strong record of success, a deep commitment to student-athlete development, and a passion for building championship-caliber programs rooted in integrity and academic excellence. His vision aligns seamlessly with our institutional values and our shared commitment to integrity, equity, and the holistic development of all who wear the green and white. And I'm confident that all of these new leaders will elevate Michigan State's game in the years ahead. And I'm also confident that our efforts to reimagine, refresh, reframe, and reaffirm our MSU 2030 strategic priorities will ensure that we have the very best roadmap for our bright future ahead. And I enjoyed our conversation with the board and members of our leadership team yesterday around this as we work to fine-tune and launch this reimagined plan in the weeks and months ahead. There's so much more to report from Michigan State, including what I hear was a wonderful celebration of Juneteenth yesterday. I'm sorry the board and I weren't available to participate on campus this year, but I want to thank everyone who helped produce the program and attended it at our new multicultural center on campus yesterday. And I want to conclude with thanks to our Traverse City hosts and an acknowledgement of those who hosted and traveled with us on the recent Detroit leg of our Spartan bus tour. These multi-day tours take university faculty to communities around Michigan that our students and partners call home. We highlight areas of Michigan State University's engagement, such as last fall's visit to MSU's Northwest Michigan Horticultural Research Center. Our Detroit tour took us to more than a dozen stops, including several locations where the university is partnering with community members in areas like healthcare and medical research, urban farming, and arts and culture. So I hope you enjoy this visual overview of the bus tour. We can run the video, please.
So far, it's been a really fascinating experience. Just impressive to see sort of how much outreach there actually is and how much MSU really does in the community.
Thank you. So I'll just note that we'll be on the road again this fall, visiting communities as far north as the Upper Peninsula. And I'll just say I said one thing in that video there that's important as I look to the future of Michigan State, and that is it's about partnerships. It's about partnerships with our faculty, faculty leadership, with our students and student leaders, with our world-class faculty, with our Board of Trustees here who I know care deeply about the future of Michigan State University, and I'm very confident, despite the challenges that higher ed in general is facing, that we're going to be facing here locally in the state of Michigan, that it will take a strong and trusted partnership with all those that will come to the table, roll up our sleeves together, and move this great university forward. And I'm going to need you by our side. So with that, thank you for being here. And I'm going to turn to the next item on our agenda. And with that, I'll turn to Board Secretary Stephen Fletcher for public participation on items germane to the agenda.
Thank you. Thank you, President Guskowitz. As you mentioned, now we'll proceed to the public participation on items germane to the agenda portion of the meeting. Each individual who has signed up to speak will have 3 minutes to address the board. You will hear a buzzer at the end when your time has concluded. Given that the number of speakers, today overall, we ask that you not exceed your allotted time. Note that persons scheduled to speak may not cede all or part of their time to other individuals or read statements on behalf of others. We will now hear from Abigail Rodriguez, followed by Tabor Witz. Abigail, I think you're joining us via Zoom today. Can you hear me? Abigail, can you hear me?
Hi, can you hear me?
We can. Please proceed with your comments, and we'll actually, Abigail, pause a second. Will you? Let's reset the timer. Okay, please start your comments.
Perfect. Good morning. My name is Abigail Rodriguez. The decision was made a long time ago. The rest of us were just dragged along for appearances. I've been at every step of this process. I've shown up. I've spoken. I've organized. I've done the work. I carried the weight of this process while the College of Arts and Letters student representative didn't even bother to attend a single committee meeting. I was left alone to represent the student voice again and again and again. And yet somehow I've been talked over, sidelined, and silenced. And still, I was the one expected to stay quiet and trust the process. Let me be clear. This merger has created harm. I have not only been dismissed, I have been targeted. And what does university leadership do? Nothing. No support, no accountability. And what enrages me the most is the behavior of interim provost Harry Spell. Over the past several months, I have felt like I have been personally intimidated repeatedly. And I have received no apology, no acknowledgement of harm. That is not professional, that is not ethical, and that is certainly not leadership. So let me be honest, I know how this vote is about to go. You're about to approve the merger. You've made your decision, but don't you dare pretend that this is a fair or inclusive process. And don't you dare say that we weren't clear about the harm. So here's my call to action. And if you're going to move forward with this merger, then you better live up to the one promise we've heard over and over again. The one promise that was sold to you, the Board of Trustees, by Interim Provost Dexco. That ARPA's identity, its community, its opportunity, and its resources will remain untouched. The Provost says that this is just a quote-unquote an administrative change. Okay, so prove it. Fight to preserve every space, every program, every value that makes ARPA what it is. Do not allow us to be swallowed by a bureaucracy and then pretend it's the same place. Because if you break that promise, if this merger becomes a slow erosion of what ARPA stands for, we will remember exactly who made it happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Abigail. Our next speaker is Tabor Witz, also appearing via Zoom. Tabor, can you hear us? Tabor, good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
We can indeed. Please proceed with your comments.
Okay, thank you. Good morning. My name is Tabor Witz. I am an alumni of the Residential College in the Arts and Humanities and the College of Arts and Letters. I'd like to start by, you know, echoing Abigail's sentiments about the merger that's on the agenda today. To add to that, I would share that the merger process overall, unfortunately, has felt rushed, it has felt undemocratic, and it has been lacking in transparency since the beginning. It has been accomplished in such a way that students, their families, alumni, faculty, and staff all together have seen a great amount of stress and uncertainty about the process. Moreover, I want to add that the working committee that was formed to explore the potential benefits and challenges of a merger was given a very narrow task from the beginning, and they were given very little context as to what an administrative merger would entail, such that their findings by necessity had to be very broad and vague, which I don't feel found a solid basis on which to make a vote today. Also, to echo what Abigail said, the merger has felt like a foregone conclusion since since the very beginning, and the committee work felt like checking a box before moving forward, which unfortunately as an alumni really sours my perception of my alma mater. Finally, I want to comment on some of the rationale for the merger contained in the agenda item today. The provost has stated that this merger is about strengthening arts and humanities at the university, which I feel is an insincere and disingenuous misrepresentation of the provost's and university's goals with the merger. We understand that it's about trimming the budget and about administrative efficiency, and we don't need to butter it up by co-opting language about protecting arts and humanities and strengthening them. Frankly, I find that it will likely weaken arts and humanities at the university, so to say the opposite is unfortunate. With that said, I urge the Board of Trustees to vote against the merger today and take more time in working on the process, doing research, and actually working with the community to find out what it would look like. Again, I urge better transparency, better communication with the public, and an overall more careful and thorough process moving forward. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much, Tabora. President Guskovitz, that concludes this section of the meeting.
I now invite Vice President Gage to present this meeting's gift, grant, and contract report.
Good morning. Chairperson Kelly, members of the Board of Trustees, I request approval of the awards found in the gift, grant, and contract report. The report period is March 17, 2025 through May 19, 2025. The total value for this period is $113,802,944.
Support. Any discussion? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. The gift, grant, and contract report is approved. I'm now going to ask Vice President Gage to introduce today's speaker.
Thank you, President Guskovitz. It's always my pleasure to highlight the excellence of research that we have at the institution. And today, in the presence of one of the greatest resources we have in the state of Michigan, our Great Lakes, I'm happy to introduce Professor Joan Rose. Professor Joan Rose holds the Homer Nolan Chair in Water Research at MSU, where she has worked for more than two decades. She is one of the world's foremost experts in water microbiology and waterborne disease. She uses molecular methods to track pathogens in water, safeguard drinking supplies, and improve wastewater treatment, and all in the interest of protecting public health. She is currently in a role of director of the MSU Water Alliance, which is a new institute we've sort of used to combine all of the more than 300 investigators at MSU who work on one aspect of water or another, and she'll tell you about that today. Joan's impact spans science, policy, and education. She's mentored future leaders and helped shape water innovation policies across the globe. She has many accolades and awards. She's a member of the National Academy of Engineering, recipient of the 2016 Stockholm Water Prize, which is the Nobel Prize of Water. She's been awarded the 2024 International Water Association Global Water Award for driving bold, lasting change in the water sector. And she has, in Michigan, she's been recognized with the Guardian of the Environment Award and MSU's Impact Award for Excellence in Research. So she brings incredible insight and humility to her work, and her leadership continues to elevate MSU's standing as a center of water and environmental excellence. Please join me in warmly welcoming Dr. Joan Rose.
Thank you. Thank you for that introduction, Doug, and President Guskovitz, and distinguished members of the Board of Trustees. Thank you for inviting me, my fellow colleagues and public. Thank you for having me. I rarely pass up an opportunity to talk about water microbiology I love it. And but today I'm going to talk about the Water Alliance and the wonderful faculty on our campus and the work that they're doing. And then it'll be a short presentation, and I hope if there's any questions or discussion, we can have a brief time for that. Okay, there we go. So the Water Alliance was actually formed officially in 2023, but the faculty at MSU for quite some time since I first got here have coalesced together to work. Because if you work in water, you're doing interdisciplinary work. And so there was the Center for Water Sciences, there was the Water Cube program. There's been quite a lot of work and blue ribbon reports and things like that. We have over 230-some members, both specialists and faculty. That doesn't count our students and our postdocs and all the other individuals that we work with that work in the water space in some way. And they've always had an interest in forming a program. I think the unique thing about the Water Alliance is that in the past there was a lot of focus on research, on the water research endeavor. This is focused on all three missions of the university, and that is education, research, and engagement. So I really like that aspect. We have about 228 individuals out of the total numbers that are on our listserv. And so we have great participation across the university, including our extension, that have formed the Water Alliance. So we're really happy about that. Now, our goals are really to take a look at broadly our departments, our other research centers, our other institutes, and to bring them together and to really catalyze, start communicating the work we do, connect people, and, of course, build the education program. I really like, you know, our focus on this, you know, solutions to water problems, right? So that's translation from science into practice. Amplifying our water research, teaching, and engagement, that picture below the communicate is Dr. Michael Wagner with young engineers who were in a competition for building robotics with Legos, and it was quite exciting to see all their energy. Of course, building networks, especially with our external partners, and the creating training and educational opportunities. So, I think most everyone here probably knows about the threats in the Great Lakes, the coastal Great Lakes. And this this freshwater body is known around the world, we are a sort of a symbol of the threats to freshwater systems, to coastal systems, and we're actually part of the marine coastal systems, too. So people that work in the Great Lakes work in marine systems as well. So there's a lot of commonality. I came from Florida originally 20 years ago, I was thinking about this long coastline in Florida and this long coastline in Michigan and some of the similarities. And, of course, you can see in the middle there, septic tanks was one of our issues. Flooding and climate impacts are clearly a problem. The non-point source pollution from our agricultural endeavors across the state and our beautiful recreational beaches. I just read that recreational beaches in the United States are worth $50 billion a year, and the Great Lakes is a high percentage of that, our 500 and something beaches just in Michigan that we monitor. Of course, we had combined sewer overflows and sewage spills that we need to take care of. These all bring various types of pollutants. The state has already taken on a leadership role, for example, with PFAS, you know, even ahead of what the federal government was doing. And you might have seen in the news that they're trying to roll back some of the PFAS regulations at the national level. But I think the state will remain a leader in that regard. So I work on beaches, and this was a headline that got a lot of attention. and we might expect any time that we have high rainfall events that more of our beaches are going to be closed. I've already seen headlines in Seattle, in Texas, in Connecticut just today about beaches being contaminated. And, of course, the high rainfall that hit Texas really impacts. So when you look at what we do on the land, you look at climate, that's the driver of the pollution to to our recreational sites, to our drinking water. Of course, then the other thing that's been in the news, and a really great report by the International Joint Commission on plastics in the Great Lakes and microplastics and the harm that that's causing. So the faculty came together in 2023, and we had a lot of meetings the first year to define who we are as water scientists across the spectrum. And water is really big, right? And flows across a lot of boundaries. But it turns out that our faculty are driven by a lot of the same things. Climate change drives their research. Engagement, equity drives their research. I was surprised to see that commonality. They really care about that. Spatial issues, working at the very local molecular level on water, all the way to the global level, the climate change, Great Lakes scale to that local beach or that local river. So these are the things that drive our faculty to the science that they do. They found themselves in what we call three hubs, and these are like transportation hubs, where people congregate, they move from hub to hub, bringing ideas, bringing research, bringing projects. The One Water, One Health Hub, to ensure water security for healthy people and planet. They are focusing on PFAS outreach, managing contaminants, multiple contaminants. That's always been the issue, mixtures. How do we assess exposure to mixtures? And water insecurity, in fact, our group in Flint that works on public health has done global work on water insecurity and now is looking at that model for Michigan and looking at our own communities in the United States, believe it or not, where we have water insecurity, where we shouldn't have. We also have the ecosystem group, Ecosystem Resilience. They are looking at new ideas in science around the mixtures of where fresh water meets the coastline and coastline resilience. That is a very big issue right now. It's how do we maintain our coastlines? We used to think, oh, it's hard infrastructure. We built a lot of hard infrastructure in the past. Now we're trying to rebuild that. Rebuild with nature, what nature gave us. And so their work is, and of course invasive species is part of the work they're doing, and maintaining our fisheries. And finally, the Water Food Energy Group. We have a great group that's looking at advancing innovation in wastewater treatment for resource recovery. And I love this because I work in water reclamation, and it turns out in water resource recovery around the world, the number one product we recover is water, clean water from our wastewater. Secondly is energy, and third is nutrients. And so we're losing nutrients, phosphorus in our soil, we're losing soil health. We're putting nutrients into our water where we don't need them, having hazardous algal blooms around the world. And so how can we switch that, switch that around? So that's very exciting. And that center has come together with others to look at where are the innovations for small communities, mixed waste, agricultural waste, food waste, animal waste in particular. We don't treat our animal waste in the world. And that is the number one source of contaminants now for nutrients and pathogens. So they're coming together with others to say, where's the innovative technology to go to small communities, recover water, energy, and nutrients as part of that circular economy? So these are real exciting efforts. We're improving health. I think we're the epicenter for water quality science and solutions in the Great Lakes. I think Michigan really has a focus on that. Water quality is across the scientists that work in these various hubs. even in the food safety arena and talking to the industry, they said water quality was the number one indicator of whether they were going to have a foodborne outbreak or contamination problem. Comprehensive new technology of source tracking, pathogen assessment, and, of course, emerging concerns on microplastic, PFAS, and viruses. And, of course, addressing disease transmission. I think the state of Michigan leads the nation in building a laboratory network that serves about 60% of the population watching disease in the community through wastewater surveillance. And wastewater surveillance has been around for a while. WHO had built it for polio virus, so we can use wastewater to look at what's happening in the community. It's inexpensive, it's rapid, and this one graph on the bottom here, the blue line shows the wastewater signal. It gave us an early warning for SARS across the state of about 30 days. And for other pathogens, we have various types of lead. And so the state of Michigan is still operating a statewide monitoring program, although the budgets have been cut across the U.S. And they are now looking at RSV. They're looking at influenza. They're looking at bird flu and norovirus, a lot of other diseases that where you can watch the community provide the information to the local health department, and they can take on public health action. So MSU's been leading the statewide network, and it's been highly successful. We're, of course, advancing the technology. Control of plastics is a big issue. Eagle has just suggested that they want to take a leadership role around managing plastics in our waterways. And this is the macroplastics and the microplastics, and now we have a researcher at MSU who's working on nanoplastics. That's even smaller and smaller. And understanding the sources, where did they come from? Did they come from sewage? Do they come from, you know, trash and the public? What I really liked about the group that came together for this is we also have a group that looks at art and science and engagement, and they use art to engage with the public, to talk about science, and to talk and to communicate. And this is a perfect project for that kind of interface. Of course, protecting nature is part of this. Plastics have a big impact on ecosystems. And beyond that, of course, we have a very strong program in the control of invasive species. And finally, this whole issue of impact of natural and human-made disasters and our coastal systems. Michigan is like Florida in a way. We've lost our wetlands. Wetlands were the system in the state that kind of grabbed the water, grabbed the contaminants. We've destroyed 80% of our wetlands over the last 100 years. And now we're trying to figure out what's the best way to restore some of that nature and nature-based solutions. The plastics project hopefully is being funded by Eagle. On July 3rd, we'll have a virtual seminar with Eagle in the city of Lansing and East Lansing. And this is a technology that's come from the Netherlands. We want to demonstrate it here, actually have a demonstration. I love demonstration projects with water. But beyond just demonstrating the technology, we're going to look at the science. Like, what's the science and the hydrology, how fast the water moves, what kinds of plastics, how do we engage with the public? So this is a scientist from Engineer Community Sustainability and Packaging that are putting this project together. I love that integration of different science. As I mentioned, inspiring the circular solutions, water is now really thinking about the circular economy. We were so linear also in our education. People were, you know, over here they learned about stormwater, over here wastewater, over here, you know, drinking water and groundwater and beaches, recreational waters. We're thinking about the one water concept. How do we look at the one water concept and tie that to the one health concept? Health of the environment, health of people, health of the biosystem, animals and plants. And as I've said, one of our focuses is on small systems, because if you look at the technology that's out there, it's been for the big cities, and they've been able to afford it, put in this new technology, and take the benefits. But the smaller communities are often the ones that need these, and it can supply enough resources actually to run the plant and then to move into the supply chain some of the materials. So it's really going to be an exciting endeavor. One of our goals for the next 2 years is to really focus on young professionals. And what I mean by our young professionals is our graduate students, our postdoctoral scientists, and our assistant professors. We know with all these cuts that they're the ones that are going to be really suffering. I think, you know, they're going to be the ones that are going to be stressed out and struggling and thinking about how they get their next grant. But there's so much we can do to help them. Right now, we're still luckily funded for by the NSF. That hasn't been cut. For our research traineeship grant, it's water cubed, and it's called water cubed because we're bringing data science, AI, machine learning together with water science, together with social science. So how do we solve water science, you know, water pollution problems or water problems, using big data, using AI, using all the new tools, but through a social lens? Through a social lens, because you never solve water problems without engagement with the community. We have 14 participating departments. We have a cohort of about 20 students, and we're building curriculum that more students are going to join. And we're just, our students are fabulous. They're so excited about the work they're doing and bringing these, getting trained at this interface. I'll just end with a couple of things on our future efforts. One of our major pushes is going to be communications. And we've got a website. We'll put up a directory soon on that website. We've got our stories up there. But we've just engaged with some of the younger people that really know how to use our social media to advance our stories. We've got such great stories around water. And we haven't told them, I think, as well as we could. And so that's really going to be our goal, is to tell the stories on all the new work that we're doing and the work that we're funding. Well, as I said, we're working with EAGLE, and this project on plastics, by the way, is a partnership with Grand Valley State University. And we'd like to see more of those kinds of projects. I was here last year, and I met with the group that's developing the Freshwater Center for Research and Innovation, and I think that is another place with a Northwestern Michigan College where we can, you know, start and look for opportunities to work together on key projects. We're going to submit a large grant to the Borough's Welcome Fund on climate and health. We have expertise in climate. We have expertise in health. We've worked together. We're really looking at how water and foodborne diseases can be mitigated at the community level, using climate information and our wastewater surveillance program. We're hoping we're going to organize and run 2 National Beach Conferences. We were awarded an EPA grant, but it's gone silent. But we have not received the letter that said we are not awarded the letter, the grant anymore, which is good news. I've heard from some of our other grants that we submitted that we were at the end of President Biden's administration that we were awarded. We already got letters that said they're going in a new direction, so we're not going to get those grants. But this one we haven't heard yet, so somebody maybe likes beaches. And so MSU will be leading these National Beach Conferences, I hope. We're going to continue to engage with stakeholders and the private sector in particular, because they have some big challenges with water. And from what we heard, they're going to need academic, intellectual approaches. And we had the World Bank at our recent Fate of the Earth conference, and they are very interested in what's going on globally, this idea of water, food, energy, health, bringing all that together and bringing some science to the local communities around the world. So we'll be starting a collaboration with the World Bank. At any rate, we're a small team right now, but of course we just represent with the faculty. We're there to help the faculty move these things forward. Erin Dreeland, the associate director, Asia Witt, our communications manager, she just joined. She's doing such a great job. Ellie Sabula is a technical aide. She just graduated from packaging and is having these young people on board is fantastic. And Melissa Downs, who's been helping with the administrative assistance work. So, again, thank you for having me here. And I'm happy to answer any questions or entertain any other comments that others would like to make. Thank you.
To me, what is best about these presentations that you bring us, they're always responsive to the moment and the space. And so I appreciate your thoughtfulness and being a culturally responsive leader. I appreciate that. So I'm terrified. Just want you to know, completely terrified. I have no idea what to do at this point about any of this water. Like, you have terrified me. I'm a germaphobe. I've worn a mask on the plane since 2007. Yeah, way before there was. And I don't get in bodies of water ever that are not chlorinated. I think back to Gray Lake in Sturgis, where I used to, as a kid, be carefree, dumb, ignorant, just swimming around in contaminants. I would never do that today. I am freaked out by the contaminants piece. And I didn't hear, I heard a lot about your plastic removal and the plastic portions of your research that you're trying to get these plastic. What about, you had poop on your, it was on the slide. What are you doing about that part? Like, and what is, and now all of a sudden it's contaminated. When is it not contaminated? Like, is there an acceptable amount? Like, what's happening right now?
Right. Well, I didn't mention the program, the MyNet program, actually started in 2014. When I first got here, I met Dr. Shannon Briggs, who's at Eagle, and she runs the beach program for the state of Michigan. And she and I got together, and she's been fabulous. She works with the local communities. She got funding early on to advance all the labs to a technology called polymerase chain reaction. It's an instrument that is sort of like a photocopy for our DNA, and so we can rapidly we've implemented a rapid technology for beach monitoring in 2014, and so the state of Michigan is the only state in the U.S. that has new technology where we can go out and monitor our beaches and get the results on the same day and say, is it contaminated or not? They have a wonderful beach guard program, so we actually monitor our beaches. We have a website where you can go and say, is this a chronic problem beach? When we have chronic problem beaches, we've been able to identify them and use source tracking tools. These are tools where we can say, where's the pollution coming from? Is it coming from cows, pigs, wild birds? And then what do we do about it to diminish the so we have, and the reason we were able to do the wastewater surveillance in 2020 so quickly and gear up in the state is because we had this previous network of laboratories. Mm. So I didn't have enough time to go into that. I could have selfishly put that up because I've been involved at the beach program for a long time. But it was a combination of leadership within Eagle, partnerships between MSU and the county health departments in Eagle, advancing new technologies, and then translating the science with the new technology into a new standard. We actually have a number in the state of Michigan with the new instrument where we can say, should we close the beach or not, very rapidly. So we're way better off than most, and we have information for the public on that. I'm with you. Don't get in a public hot tub.
Oh,
I'm with you.
So I think your goal of comms and wrapping up the will be really important. Because I had no clue there was a dashboard, and it's not going to change my mind. I'm not getting in. But it would be nice to warn my friends who might want to.
Right. So Thank you. The hazardous algal blooms are emerging even more. And so using remote sensing plus robotics, better robotics in the system, where we can not only say there's algae, but there's toxins. And if there's toxins, you can't let your pets go in. You can't let your, you know. And now we've got, this whole coastal resilience issue is tied to water quality as well as our shoreline and what we do with our shoreline and the natural system. So I think that we're really focusing on that. But I think technology and early warning and communications are the key to that. Yeah. Thanks for your question. I got to talk about the beaches.
Dr. Rose, if you haven't already, I would encourage you to team up with those that are lobbying for infrastructure improvements in Michigan. So one source that I know is the cause of what Dr. Rima brought up is the combined stormwater and sewage pipes in many of our legacy communities.
Combined sewer overflows, yeah.
Yep. So, for instance, in the Downriver area of Detroit, when we have heavy rain events, the pipes that handle both types of flows overflow. That ends up in the Rouge River, the Detroit River, Lake Erie, and so on. And so it's a very expensive proposition to change all those, but I see your work as being essential in helping those that are lobbying for those infrastructure improvements. So I hope that, you're in good communication with those types of folks.
Yeah, we work with the Michigan American Water Works Association, the Michigan Water Environment Association, and these groups are very involved with both stormwater and, of course, wastewater and drinking water systems. And so looking for innovation there. I think that the science we've done has played into the goal to try to get a statewide septic tank ordinance and also to look at how do we fund stormwater systems because we in the state of Michigan, unlike other states, we don't have any way to actually fund, we don't have a stormwater programs except at the local level. The local people have to fund that. And stormwater is one of our big issues. And so looking for innovation for treatment, but also what do we do on the land so that when the water runs off and could we use more nature-based solutions to mitigate transport of contaminants in stormwaters and building wetlands, more wetlands and agricultural systems and things like that are some of the goals. So, I appreciate what you're saying. And I think the our infrastructure, our price tag, is quite high, but it's an asset for our future and for our water future.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for all the great work you're doing. Also, thank you for taking this very complicated issue and putting it down to a level that I could understand what you're doing. You talked about Flint and water insecurity. I was wondering if you mean insecurity in the sense of we're not comfortable that the water's safe, or if you mean water insecurity, we just can't afford the public to pay for the water.
Yeah, water security is very comprehensive. And so it means both lack of access to clean water and safe water. And obviously you either drink your polluted water or you move. You move someplace where you can get access to water because otherwise, you have to have water to live.
If you can.
And then secondly, there's affordability in this state.
Right.
There's no doubt. In fact, we were lacking in use of our state revolving funds in the state of Michigan, and that's changed over the last 6 years. But it's still not enough. It's not enough money and resources. And, you can't just wait for every crisis because, in Flint, the public suffered for almost 2 years before they decided to switch the water back and then make some decisions. And the water... within 2 weeks of the switch of the water, certain parts of the community were having problems,
yeah,
and terrible water. And then, of course, exposure to lead, and we had the Legionnaires outbreak. So, and Flint's known around the world.
Yeah.
When I go around the world, they're like, oh, yeah, Flint. And so what we do there and what we do for our other communities like that, that don't have their own resources, how do we use state resources? How do we use federal resources to help with our water infrastructure? Because we can't afford it on the back of the tax, just the ratepayers. It's not possible.
So water insecurity is both clean
it's
water
both.
And affordable water.
It's both, and it's hard to believe. But even maybe it was about a decade ago, the controversy of turning water off in Detroit for people that couldn't pay.
Yeah.
Right? And they're like, that, in the United States, in the global communities, we say water is a right, access to water is a right, a human right. And yet in the United States, we were turning off water to our poorest, and they had no access. And so that's still happening around the United States in pockets. I've been surprised, and I think when I got into this, I thought, our water's so great, and now I'm getting more and more worried. Just because of the confluence of climate change, aging infrastructure, lack of investment, and new contaminants that are showing up all the time. So Or maybe it's my age showing. I don't know, but I'm worried now.
In my understanding, what in Detroit, it wasn't necessarily turning off water to poor people who couldn't pay. It was turning off water to those who are kind of, quote-unquote, abusing the system. And there's a lot of abandoned homes and such that were, and other churches that were kind of abusing the system. That was my understanding. I could be 100% wrong. It was actually a lot less poor families getting their water shut off. That was pretty minuscule. It was other people who were abusing the system. Is that not in your understanding?
Well, yeah, it was a little bit of both, but I think that what drove the utilities and then others to start to think about, and this happened nationwide too, but Michigan had to think about it early on, to how do we look at affordability, was the fact that some of these families did not have access to water. And it wasn't so much abuse of the system. And then affordability, if you looked at the cost of water across the state, in poor communities, they were paying more, right, than in the rich. So it was affordability.
I'm not saying poor people were abusing the system. I don't want to be misquoted on that.
Yeah.
Okay. Dr. Rose, you talked about PFAS, and it seems as if PFAS has become much more of an issue as a contaminant in the last decade. I mean, I had never heard of it up until maybe 7-8 years ago. Is there something unique about our waterways in Michigan that causes the aggregation of PFAS in our water? And is this a contaminant that's always existed, but we've only recently been able to identify it?
I don't think it's anything unique about Michigan waters per se, but I would say that it's partly the sources of the PFAS, but also the state of Michigan has a history, right? So we could start back with DDT. You know, both the scientists and the government coming together and saying, boy, this is harmful. What should we do about it? PCB was next. We had a role in PCBs first, and then it hit nationally. Even dioxins. And now, of course, PFAS just is, we did more monitoring early on than any other state. We're still not doing enough monitoring of some of our groundwaters. 30% or 40% of our population are on groundwater and their own wells, and we don't monitor our groundwater very well. And PFAS just moves, and it's so stable. And we're finding out more about all the different kinds of PFAS, and then also the health effects and which ones are most risky. So I think it was that Michigan took a leadership role in this idea. And the Great Lakes in general, if you go back to the International Joint Commission and the work that they've done with collaborations with our Canadian neighbors, there's always been a focus on the state of the Great Lakes, right, the state of the lakes, and monitoring these contaminants in our sediments. And I think in Michigan we recognize, okay, now it's not just the Great Lakes. It's our rivers. It's our groundwaters. It's our shorelines. So we've gone inward and started to look at more. So I think that it's partly that as well.
Thank you. Any other questions? All right.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Okay, I now invite Interim Provost Yaitsko to present this meeting's personnel actions.
Thank you, President Guskowitz. Thank you also for the very kind words and the honor. I'm humbled, and I've been very grateful for having had the opportunity to serve. Trustees, I present for approval the items on the June 2025 list of personnel actions. I present for approval the following tenured faculty appointments: Sydney Everhart, PhD, Professor, Department of Plant, Soil, and Microbial Sciences, with tenure, effective July 1, 2025. Kwan Hugh Hu, PhD, Associate Professor, Department of Statistics and Probability, with tenure, effective August 16, 2025. Huan Jun Feng, PhD, Associate Professor, Department of Mechanical Engineering, with tenure, effective August 16, 2025. Kelly Hume, DVM, Associate Professor, Department of Small Animal Clinical Sciences, with tenure, effective September 8, 2025. Denise Imai Leonard, DVM, PhD, Associate Professor, Department of Pathobiology and Diagnostic Investigation, with tenure effective October 1st, 2025. Carolyn Lochner, Ph.D., Associate Professor, C.S. Mott Department of Public Health, with tenure effective August 16th, 2025. Brian Leonard, DVM, Ph.D., Associate Professor, Department of Small Animal Clinical Sciences, with tenure effective October 1, 2025. Ted R. Miller, Ph.D., C.S. Mott Professor, C.S. Mott Department of Public Health, with tenure effective June 13, 2025. Lewis Moore, Ph.D., Professor, Department of History, with tenure effective August 16, 2025. Katarina Pesce, Ph.D., Associate Professor, Department of Kinesiology, with tenure effective August 16, 2025. M. Billy Sankofa Waters, Ph.D., Associate Professor, Department of African American and African Studies, with tenure effective August 16, 2025. Catherine C. Siegfried Speller, Ph.D., Professor, School of Criminal Justice, with tenure effective August 16, 2025. Morgan Vigil Hayes, Ph.D., Associate Professor, Department of Media and Information, with tenure effective August 16, 2025. Mark A. Williams, Ph.D., Professor, Department of Plant, Soil, and Microbial Sciences, with tenure effective August 16, 2025. At this point, please turn your attention to the screen. I'm now pleased to present for approval the 55 faculty members promoted to associate professor with tenure and the 6 associate professors who acquired tenure with reappointment. In addition, this year, we also would like to recognize our 43 faculty members promoted to full professor. 2 faculty members promoted to associate professor without tenure, and 50 faculty members reappointed as assistant professor. Congratulations to all of our faculty on these achievements. It is now my distinct pleasure to present for approval the appointment of Laura Lee McIntyre, Ph.D., Provost and Executive Vice President for Academic Affairs and MSU Research Foundation Professor, Department of Counseling, Educational Psychology, and Special Education, with tenure effective August 4th, 2025. I present for approval the appointment of Jason M. Batt, Vice President and Director of Intercollegiate Athletics, Department of Intercollegiate Athletics, effective June 17th, 2025 through June 30th, 2031. I am pleased to recommend the appointment of Thomas Stubblefield, Ph.D., Dean, College of Arts and Letters, effective July 1st. 2025. I'm pleased to recommend Matthew Dom, Ph.D., Interim Dean, College of Agriculture and Natural Resources, for a change in title to Dean and Associate Provost, effective June 13, 2025. The action includes the recommendation of Thomas Izzo, Head Coach, Men's Basketball, Intercollegiate Athletics, subject to contract, for adding the title of Interim Co-Athletic Director, effective May 12, 2025 through June 16, 2025. The action also includes the recommendation of Jennifer Smith, Deputy Athletics Director, Intercollegiate Athletics, subject to contract, for adding the title of Interim Co-Athletic Director, effective May 12 through June 16, 2025. I'm pleased to recommend Adam Nightingale, Head Coach, Men's Hockey, Department of Intercollegiate Athletics, subject to contract, effective July 1st, 2025 to June 30th, 2030, as a rolling 5-year term. It is recommended that the title of Vice President and Chief Human Resource Officer be eliminated, effective June 13th, 2025, and that all applicable policy documents be revised to reflect this change. The custodians of board and university-level policy documents are authorized to update position titles referenced in those policies in alignment with this action and consultation with the Office of the President. Please note that the title is changing to Associate Vice President for Human Resources. Additionally, I am pleased to present 10 outstanding scholars recently approved for the title of University Distinguished Professor. On June 9, 1989, the MSU Board of Trustees approved the establishment of the University Distinguished Professor designation. 21 faculty were approved with the designation on June 20, 1990. Since then, 153 faculty have been approved with the designation of University Distinguished Professor. From the 17th nomination cycle, a standing advisory committee reviewed nominations and recommended 10 candidates to the provost. Based on these recommendations, President Guskowitz and I now recommend approval of the University Distinguished Professor designation for the following 10 faculty to be effective June 13, 2025. Wando Echebe, Ph.D., Department of History, College of Social Science. Jichuan Chen, Ph.D., Department of Geography, College of Social Science. David Dalchis, Ph.D., Department of Plant, Soil, and Microbial Sciences, College of Agricultural and Natural Resources. Kathleen Fitzpatrick, Ph.D., Department of English, College of Arts and Letters. Alexandra Gade, Ph.D., Department of Physics and Astronomy, College of Natural Sciences, and Facility for Rare Isotope Beams. Jennifer Johnson, Ph.D., Department of Public Health, College of Human Medicine. Leo Kempel, Ph.D., Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering in the College of Engineering. Richard Lunt, Ph.D., Department of Chemical Engineering and Materials Science, College of Engineering. Kristen Wren, Ph.D., Department of Educational Administration, College of Education. Angela Wilson, Ph.D., Department of Chemistry, College of Natural Science. Also included in your materials are information reports for academic personnel actions.
Thank you. Is there a motion to approve the personnel actions?
So moved.
Support.
Any discussion?
Congrats, Angela.
Congrats. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The personnel actions are approved.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Provost Yitzko. At this time, I'm going to call on Trustee Sandy Pierce, who will present the committee report for Budget and Finance.
Thank you, President Guskowitz. With your permission and that of my fellow trustees, I would like to put the fiscal year 2026 operating budget at the end of my report rather than at the beginning. So I will start with, as chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees authorize the issuance and delivery of commercial paper notes and adopt the resolution attached hereto, with Lisa Fraze, our CFO, available for discussion if needed.
So moved.
Support.
Support.
Discussion.
Any discussion?
Yeah, I just have, I would request, Lisa, could you give us a brief, and I do mean brief, explanation of why we're doing this? I think it would benefit a lot of people.
We currently have a commercial paper program that is $250 million. We were at the point where we were going to have to renew that anyway. It is used for short-term funding of capital prior to issuing bonds, or for very short-term capital where we have to finance it for a short-term period. Given the disruptions and potential disruptions from funds flow from federal sources or other sources, we are requesting that plan be expanded to $500 million and also be allowed for general corporate purposes. What this will allow us to do is to finance any short-term working capital cash flow disruption should they occur, and allow us more time to appropriately react rather than having to react in less than a day.
So I think I said to you a couple weeks ago, it's accurate to think of this as giving you a
tool for your toolbox to help smooth out our cash flows, allow you to perhaps borrow at a lower interest rate at times, and is just a general good business practice to help the university maintain stability in the next several months, 2 years?
That's correct, and a number of our peers are both expanding their programs and or already have these in place.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's a great question. Other questions or discussion? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes.
Okay. As chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby adopts the revised Ordinance 50, University Zoning Ordinance, attached hereto as Exhibit A, with Dan Bowman available for any discussion.
Your support?
Support.
Okay. Discussion? No discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes.
As chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby authorizes the administration to purchase approximately 3.3 acres of land located at 16745 Lamphere in Detroit, upon such terms and conditions as may be acceptable to the president or the president's designee, with Dan Bowman available for any discussion.
Support.
Support. Any discussion?
Similarly, Dan, because I think this is important for people to know, could you talk real quick why it's best to own this rather than lease it and how it's tied to the services that we're doing inside the city? Just a minute or less.
Sure. This was property we actually leased a number of years ago to begin a program on urban farming within the city, and there's a lot of great research going on in that area. It turns out, without actually owning the property, it inhibits our ability to receive additional grants, so it just makes sense at this time to go ahead and purchase the property at a low cost from the city and continue the research.
And Dan, this was one of the stops on our recent Spartan bus tour, I believe.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, it's a fantastic piece of property and important work being done there. All right, any other discussion? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
As chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby authorizes the administration to sell the real estate property at 601 Ionia in Grand Rapids, upon such terms and conditions as may be acceptable to the president or the president's designee. Again, Dan Bowman is available for discussion if needed.
Support.
Okay, any discussion? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
As chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby authorizes the administration to plan for the project titled IM West Planning Study. And again, Dan Bowman is available for discussion.
Support.
Any discussion?
Yes, just a couple of quick comments on this. Because, again, I think this is useful for people to understand the approach. When you read the package that was provided on the public website with this, it talks a lot about deferred maintenance of this particular building, which is true, as it is with many of our buildings. But previously, we were looking at, you know, once we built the new rec center and it came online, it was just kind of a foregone conclusion that we would take down IM West. That may yet be the ultimate result, but what we're going to do here is do a holistic approach to the rec services and sports on campus, because it's important to note that what happens at one building is never independent of what happens at another building. You know, we have a large campus where things play off one another. And so the last time we did a rec study was several years ago. And as we're entering this era where, you know, university spending has reached somewhat of a tipping point, we have to be laser focused on the value proposition. And, you know, what's more important than the academics and mental and physical wellness of our student body? So we're going to, in my interpretation of what we're going to do here, is move forward and do a holistic approach to what does recreation sports look like here over the next 10 years. What's needed, what's not, what's the right capacities, what are our national peers doing, with a thought towards what President Guskowitz has always said is operational excellence when it comes to our core lines of business, if you will. And this would be one of those. So I look forward to working with the administrative team in coming to the whatever the best solution is as we study this going forward, and also receiving the inputs from members of campus and faculty and community stakeholders, so that you know, when we look at building a building or taking it down, it's within the broader context of our core mission. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Bailo. Any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
As Chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby authorizes the administration to plan for the project titled First Gen Center. And again, Dan Bowman's busy today. He's available for discussion.
Support.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
As Chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby authorizes the administration to plan for the project titled Veterinary Medical Center, A-Wing, Domestic Water, and Infrastructure. Again, Dan Bowman is available.
Is there support?
Support.
Support. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
As Chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby authorizes the administration to plan for the project titled Chemistry, HVAC Replacement and Improvements. Again, Dan Bowman is available for discussion.
Is there support?
Support.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
As Chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby approves the rescission of Board of Trustees 601, Accounting System, Adoption of Michigan Uniform System. Lisa Frace, our CFO, is available for discussion.
Support.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
Okay, before I read the resolution, which was really the first resolution, recommending the adoption of Michigan State's 2026 operating budget, I'd like to first provide some perspective. We have, as a board, have thoroughly evaluated the administration's proposed budget to be sure that we achieved really a balanced approach that thoughtfully addresses our structural budget issues, that makes critical investments across campus to support our growth, and prioritizes an outstanding and affordable education for our students. The board is absolutely united in our commitment to ensure that Michigan State is best positioned to deliver exceptional academic programs that equip students for success now and in their future. And we also want to support our faculty and staff to succeed in their roles as the true engines of making this great university work and flourish. As we, as a board, and most of the board attends the Budget and Finance Committee meetings, as we evaluated options, we studied the challenges impacting our university's financials. Double-digit increases in the centrally funded cost of employee health care, the impact of inflation and tariffs across most of our operating costs, like food and supplies that are necessary to actually run this university, reduced income from federal actions, research cuts, restrictions on international student enrollments. And if you've been reading or listening to the news this week, then you have heard of the threat of additional state appropriation cuts. State appropriations per resident undergraduate student has fallen by 44% since fiscal year 2000 when we adjusted for inflation. Every June, the board works to determine tuition rates as part of the overall university budget process. We carefully consider tuition rates as part of our responsibility to balance access, affordability, and ensuring the resources that are necessary to support MSU's mission as a world-class research institution. And so, you will see when I read the resolution, if you go to the actual addendums, that we are actually proposing in the resolution a tuition rate increase on resident undergraduates at the legislative cap set in Lansing. We expect that to be 4.5% or $798 per academic year. If the legislative cap is lower than 4.5%, so will our rate increase be lower. So we'll pay attention to that. It's not finalized yet. It's important to note that over the past 10 years, MSU has held tuition rate increases to the lowest level of all Michigan public universities. And MSU has consistently increased university-funded financial aid in recent years, which has grown at an average of 7 to 8% annually, far outpacing any tuition increases. We believe that this tuition increase, coupled with the university-wide budget reductions of 9% over the next 2 years that President Guskowitz addressed in his opening comments, is the right balance of revenue enhancements and cost containment to place MSU on a strong financial footing while continuing to advance our mission. We have a very strong balance sheet. We have a very strong credit rating, and we intend to keep it that way. I want to say that I appreciate Lisa Frace, our CFO, and your entire team. Lisa, please give our thanks to all the work that you've been doing for months on trying to get this budget finalized. I also want to thank my fellow trustees because we have had robust discussions on the budget and the tuition, and this is hard and challenging. But I appreciate the collaboration of my colleagues and their commitment to this process and the university's success. So with that, let me read the resolution. Be it resolved that the Board of Trustees adopts the attached Michigan State University fiscal year 2026 operating budget, including tuition and fee rates for the 25-26 academic year as presented, and be it further resolved that the administration is directed to implement the Michigan State University fiscal year 2026 operating budget. If the rates approved herein exceed the legislative cap once they're established, the administration is further directed to adjust resident undergraduate tuition rates to comply with the cap.
Is there a second?
Support.
Discussion.
I just wanted to thank Trustee Pierce for your leadership during all of these budget discussions. We really appreciate you.
I'll second that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Trustee Pierce. If there's no further discussion.
Yeah,
we were just going to wonder who was going to go first.
Oh, okay.
I didn't want to interrupt.
Yes.
Very quickly. And I, too, want to thank Lisa Frace for, and her team for her hard work and Trustee Pierce's leadership and President Guskowitz's leadership. You know, none of this is easy, and I want to kind of address two core constituencies here. You know, I want to acknowledge the uncertainty and the pain that many faculty are feeling right now who are core contributors to our university, who are dealing with things that they haven't dealt with before budgetarily. And that's acknowledged, and that's part of this. I'd also like to acknowledge that families, as I said earlier, in many cases have reached a tipping point when it comes to the cost of higher education. And, you know, with less high school graduates coming out of Michigan high schools than previous years and trending down and you know, other pressures on higher ed in terms of distance learning and other things that young people are pursuing, but that's not taken lightly in terms of the value proposition that we seek to provide here. So no increase is ever taken lightly. But in light of everything going on, it seems that we've struck the balance here. And
we hope to have a continuous feedback loop with all of you stakeholders, because at the end of the day, we need to provide the most value for every dollar that comes into our university in terms of its research and the learning and the problem solving that goes on here. So I just wanted to kind of say that, that Trustee Pierce is correct, that this is something that we spent quite a bit of time on and ended up in this place that seems right at this time for this university. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Bailo. Any further discussion?
Sure. So my stomach still hurts from the Rose presentation, quite frankly, and it's hurting now still around this tuition increase. One of the I ask for feedback a lot from different people around this role that I have committed myself to as trustee. And I asked one person her feedback regarding my, you know, my performance or, you know, my decision making. And she said, well, your first mistake, she had a list, your first mistake was voting no on the tuition increase when I first became a trustee. And I voted no after asking the board to consider a gradual increase during a time of COVID when people were out of work. Folks weren't able to pay their bills or their water bills. And I didn't agree that we should, as a land-grant institution, ask more of folks who weren't even on campus at the time to pay. And so I took a lot of hits. She said that was my first mistake. She, again, like I said, she had she enumerated several. But I don't think that was a mistake. I don't think it's a mistake to be humane, to show up for the people that we have decided we're going to serve, which is the state of Michigan and our residents. And so I didn't think it was a mistake then. Last year, when President Guskowitz came, was the first time that I've ever voted for an increase in tuition. And honestly, that's a testament to my trust in his leadership and also his flexibility and agility in changing what he asked for initially and hearing concerns and responding as a responsive leader should. So this year, I want to first thank Chair Pierce for your work and Lisa Frace for your work. This is the most information we've had around a budget since I've been on this board. We're asked to vote on projections and what-ifs and perchances, and we don't necessarily get all of the scenarios of what if and the perchance and maybe perhaps. This year we did. We went through detailed scenarios and budget projections, and I feel like I'm making an informed decision today, and that I am deeply appreciative of. That's part of our oversight responsibility, and I will say that I'm still trusting and still holding out hope that all of my choices are handled with responsibility, particularly fiscal responsibility. So I wanted to thank you for your leadership and thank you for your transparency. And I want to remember, we talked about the aid that's increased. I want you to remember to tell me how that's going to happen, because my first dedication and commitment is to those who are most marginalized and minoritized financially in this state. And so I want to make sure that we are equitable in our access, and that people who would be best served by Michigan State University are able to attend.
Thank you for saying that, but what I wanted to clarify is that if this 4.5% increase goes through, it's about $10 to $12 million, and a third of that will be allocated to financial aid. So I should have been clear on that, so thank you for mentioning that.
And that's what I was going to say, so I don't have to say anything now.
Are you good?
Yep, I'm good. I was going to just talk about the increase in financial aid, okay. But Sandy covered
it. Thank you, Trustee Vassar.
Thank you.
Trustee Scott, any other discussion?
One more point. We look at metrics, right? There's about a bunch of them we can look at when it comes to this. One of the key ones was the level of debt from graduating students on average. And if I recall correctly, the number for in-state undergraduate students who took out loans of both public and private was about $26,000, meaning that the total overall average, if you include all undergraduate students that were in-state, it was less than that. I don't know how meaningful that is to any of you, but, you know, when we look at what it costs a family to put someone through here, you know, you hear stories about people graduating with $100,000 in debt, which I think is true in some cases for certain undergraduate degrees. But, you know, I'm just saying that's one metric that I'm always going to have my eye on so that we're not graduating students with debt burdens that are not sustainable. You know, so it's not just the increases in tuition dollars. There's other metrics that could be looked at to figure out what the real burden is on our families. So if you're ever interested in learning more, I encourage you to reach out to members of our administration or those of us that can get you the answers. But it's very important information. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Bela. Any other discussion? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes. And I just want to take the opportunity to thank the board and Lisa Frace, you and your team, because this was a very thoughtful process, deliberative process, one that is difficult for many of us. But I think Trustee Pierce said it best in terms of putting us on a strong financial footing for our future. So I thank the board. Trustee Pierce.
Okay. The committee also received information on the cash pool investment returns, the annual operating trust, and the Endowment Trust Annual Operating Report for fiscal year 25. We also received construction and facilities updates, which are very detailed. So I want to thank all of administration that helped put all of that together. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Trustee Pierce. With that, we will turn to Trustee Kanacki Jefferson for the report on academic affairs.
Thank you, and good morning. On behalf of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the Board of Trustees approves the creation of BOT 414, Board of Trustees Conflict of Interest and Conflict of Commitment Identification and Disclosure, that's Attachment A, and be it further resolved that this policy shall replace the following existing Board of Trustees policies, BOT 409, Outside Work for Pay, and BOT 503, Conflicts of Interest, Faculty, Academic Staff.
Support.
And Interim Provost Yitzko is available if there are any questions.
Any discussion or questions? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
On behalf of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby approves revisions to BOT 411, Board of Trustees Political Candidacy Policy, as indicated in Attachment A. Be it further resolved that the Board of Trustees hereby directs the Office of the Provost to take appropriate measures to update other university-wide policies and procedures to effectuate these revisions, including the rescission of conflicting provisions in consultation with academic governance.
Support.
Support.
Okay.
And Secretary Fletcher is available if there are any questions.
I just have a comment.
Okay.
This is really good because, in our view, this makes it easier and cleaner for people that work at MSU to run for public office, as is their constitutional right, and it's wonderful when people seek to be involved in the process. So that's all I wanted to say. I appreciate us taking a look at that and eliminating certain ambiguities and any trouble someone would red tape someone would have to go through in order to run for an office if that's what they so desire.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
On behalf of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby approves the amendments to the bylaws for academic governance included as Attachment A.
Support.
And Interim Provost Yaitsko is available for any questions.
Any discussion? Questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Abstentions? Motion passes.
And I have one final motion. On behalf of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby approves a merger of the Residential College in the Arts and Humanities and the College of Arts and Letters.
Is there support?
Support.
And again, Interim Provost Yaitsko is available if there are questions or discussion.
Any discussion or questions?
Well, just a couple of comments here. I spoke with Catherine yesterday, who gave us a presentation from ASMSU. Thank you for that. Also spoke with Abigail, who you heard from today. And I understand like the uncertainty, I think, for some of the students, and that is understood. I just want to be clear that, you know, it's correct. The commitments that were made to the board, you know, because it's coming to us for a reason, were that the experience will remain the same for students who were in that college. Now that the proof will be in the execution of that. But I had two reasons for my vote on this. One is, as you already heard, the budgetary environment is quite challenging, and there are some savings here in the overlap, which is not the sole reason for doing this. But what I'm going to ask is that our Committee on Academic Affairs keep this on their radar screen in the coming 1 or 2 or 3 years as this unfolds, to ensure that the concerns and of the students in the Residential College of Arts and Humanities, as they may now be in the College of Arts and Letters, are understood and can be dealt with, and that they're visible, and that things are held to be the same as it's been explained to us in terms of their experience educationally and otherwise. So that's what I wanted to say.
I just want to say I appreciate Trustee Bailiff's comments. I'll echo them, and that certainly will be a focus of our committee. And also, I appreciate your work as a liaison on our behalf to students in supporting them in this transition. And I want to thank Interim Provost Yaitsko's leadership in this role, too.
I just want to echo both comments you made, and then just reiterate how important these residential colleges are as someone who had the benefit of being in a residential college at MSU, and the importance of creating that smaller community within a larger community. I think these are extremely important here at MSU, and I have a commitment to the community that we will remain putting the emphasis on these, because I think they're truly important to our academic work here at MSU.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
And then just one final note. Our committee also received a presentation on artificial intelligence from Vice Provost Marcio Oliveira, and an update on unionization. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Trustee Konecki Jefferson. At this time, I will turn to Trustee Brianna Scott to offer up the committee report on audit, risk, and compliance. Trustee Scott.
President Guskowitz. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance, I move that the Board of Trustees of Michigan State University hereby approve the following: amendments to the option agreement with CytoHub Inc., an exclusive copyright and patent license agreement with Iora Nature Tech Inc., a purchasing agreement with Scarlet Spartan Solutions LLC, and a sponsored research agreement with the Soil Inventory Project.
Is there support?
Support.
Okay. And Doug Gage is available for any discussion.
Before Doug comes up, I just have a couple comments. Many may have seen the May 5th state news article that talked quite specifically about some of the work of the Audit, Risk, and Compliance Committee, for which I chair and I've sat on for 6 years. And due to a lot of misunderstanding and, I believe, misinformation in that article concerning the due diligence of that committee, I thought it important for the Spartan community and others to hear from Doug Gage about the due diligence in the process, which will prove that there is not a rubber stamping. There is quite a bit of due diligence that goes into the integrity of these conflicts to make sure that the processes are appropriate and that they are vetted well before in the Audit, Risk, and Compliance Committee members actually receive them. But once we receive them, then in committee we have the opportunity to really talk about and dive into these to make sure that there are, you know, no other issues that anyone may see. And there have been times, I don't want to go into them, but there have been plenty of times in the past where the Audit, Risk, and Compliance Committee has asked for further information, has sent things back, and some additional work has had to be done before these things have been approved. And so I would invite Doug Gage to come up and explain this process over which he oversees for the edification of those that have questions about how this gets to the place where the board actually then votes. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Scott. Yeah, there is quite a robust process, and that may not be visible in the resolution that are considered by the board, but I thought I might go through that so that you could see how we handle them and the multiple oversight levels that we have. So when an activity or interests are disclosed, which is a requirement by our faculty, or the Conflict Management and Disclosure Office receives an indication that there may be a conflict, that initiates a process to develop a conflict management plan. And the first step in that process is the director of the Conflict Management Office, really our outstanding Alicia Lamborghini, JD, will meet with the faculty member, and they will begin to discuss a conflict management plan. And those plans are meant to protect students, protect the interests of the institution, as well as the interests of the faculty member. So those conversations are initiated, and the chair and dean of that individual can also weigh in on that plan. So the next step in the process is a pre-review process. And so that conflict management plan is then looked at by a group that consists of the Office of General Counsel, Office of Sponsored Programs, MSU Technologies, a representative from the Conflict Disclosure and Management Office, Business Connect, and others as needed, for example, Human Subjects Protection. At that meeting, the CMP, which has been developed, is discussed, and improvements or edits can be made at that point. At that product then will go to the full conflict review committee, which is made up of faculty, who will look at that review, and they have their own ability to influence what the nature of that document is, any changes that need to be made, so that is yet another level of review from a different group of individuals. If there's more information needed at that point, then it goes back up and goes back through the process again. So when a plan is developed and approved through those steps, at that point the document is signed by the faculty member, the chair, dean, and my office, which suggest that it is ready for approval by the Board of Trustees. That document goes to the Audit, Risk, and Compliance Committee with the resolution or potential resolution that might come up. And as Trustee Scott said, there's an opportunity to sort of ask more questions to bring it back, and we have done that. And it's only at that point that the resolution will, if the Audit, Risk, and Compliance Committee is ready to move it forward, then it would go to the full board for approval. The conflict management plans are available to the full board and are reviewed at as they wish, and can get additional information as needed.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Any questions or discussion?
Hold on, Professor Gage.
Sure.
I just want to compliment you and your team for being very thorough. You know, with the process, you and I have talked about it a couple times, and I think oftentimes because you have such a robust process, it becomes fairly routine for us in the course of this meeting. But to Trustee Scott's point, like, we talk about it within the art committee and everything like that. And, you know, one school of thought was, because it's so routine, like, do we even need to consider those here at this meeting? But I think clearly it's still a best practice for us because it allows us to, I don't know, have the final say or the final question or what have you, which I think you agree with is a pretty good
policy.
Yeah.
Yeah, these are institutional protections, and I think that's important that the board has a say in those decisions.
Right. So I thank you for your work and your diligence on this.
Thank you very much.
Any other discussion? Yes, I think there was a motion to support.
I'll say support.
Support.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any further discussion? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
This concludes my report.
Thank you, Trustee Scott. We'll now turn to Trustee and Chair Kelly Tebay for the committee report on student life and culture.
Thank you. The Student Life and Culture Committee received presentations on the annual diversity report, the student conduct framework at MSU, and the implementation of the campus anti-hazing bill. We also decided to schedule further time to analyze the diversity report, so that will be scheduled at a further date so that everyone had ample opportunity to ask questions and go through the data. So that will be happening in the future. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Chair Tebay. So we turn to you for the liaison reports.
Oh, yeah, liaisons. We'll start with the students. Catherine, do you want to start? Go to the podium so they can hear you, Catherine. Yeah, thank you. Sorry.
Okay. I'll start over. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for having me here today in Traverse City. My name is Catherine Harding. I'm an incoming senior studying political science with minors in international development, business, and creative writing. And I'm the newly elected ASMSU and student body president. I began my term about a month ago, and I'm very excited to serve the undergraduate student body. ASMSU has elected and hired the rest of our executive leadership team, which is as follows. Our Vice President for Finance and Operations is Anna Burke, a Human Resources and Political Science Junior. Our Vice President for Academic Affairs is Tony Pham, a Biomedical Sciences Sophomore. Our Vice President for Governmental Affairs is Deontay Sparks, a Political Science Sophomore. Our Vice President for Internal Administration is Maddie Haynes, a Political Science Pre-Law Junior. Our Vice President for Student Allocations is Tom V. Riopetti, a Supply Chain Management Junior. Our Chief of Staff is Isabel Buckles, an International Relations Junior. And our Chief Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer is Rehana Mirza, a Human Biology Junior. Lots of Vice Presidents, I know. ASMSU has a great group of new and dedicated student leaders, and I really look forward to updating you all on the important work we will do throughout our terms this year. ASMSU is currently out of session for the summer, so right now our work is primarily focused on preparing for everything to start back up in the fall and also revisiting past initiatives. We are in the process of hiring various staff members, having initial meetings with administrators and constituents, and planning for the 62nd session of our General Assembly to start back up in August. ASMSU is disappointed that the merging of the Residential College of the Arts and Humanities under the College of Arts and Letters is moving forward. Throughout this past year, ASMSU has expressed time and time again the lack of student voices in the process, with the passage of three bills and releasing of two statements in opposition to the merger. These bills address the need for transparency, the urging of the Board of Trustees to vote no on the resolution, and a position of no confidence in the interim provost. So it is frustrating to see that these calls for a consultative process were not properly addressed, and we are seeing an unfavorable outcome today. Let me be clear, this is not something that the undergraduate students wanted. The effects of this merger will likely be felt slowly over time, but one of the most immediate will be that, unfortunately, representation of the arts and humanities in shared governing spaces across campus will be reduced, effectively weakening the arts and humanities rather than strengthening them. I recognize that this is the new reality of arts and humanities education at Michigan State, so going forward, it is critical that student stakeholders are consulted and collaborated with in the upcoming integration process. The process of integrating ARCA into Cal should be done by genuinely listening to student and faculty feedback, ideas, and concerns, rather than rushing and asking the wrong questions. We expect better than what we saw this past year. In fact, it is necessary. We expect that the college integration will be done in such a way that is inclusive and considerate of all perspectives with full transparency. ASMSU is committed to keeping the arts and humanities alive and thriving here at Michigan State, and we are ready to get to work to hold you all accountable to the reassurances made regarding the preservation of ARCA community values, resources, and programming. I would also like to note ASMSU's support for the recent steering committee resolution regarding budgetary cuts. Typically, two ASMSU officers will have voting privileges, but since steering committee was acting on behalf of the Faculty Senate, we did not. As our faculty senators speak about the resolution, it is important that we express that if given the opportunity to vote, we would have voted in favor of it. The last thing we want to see is potential cuts to student success initiatives and programming, so we stand with the Faculty Senate in hoping for an outcome that is led by example. ASMSU is very excited about the planning of the new First Generation Student Center. We passed Bill 6139 back in November to advocate for this. First generation students make up about 21% of our undergraduate student population, so this is going to be a really, really amazing resource. I want to shout out the ASMSU General Assembly representatives who are a part of the first generation student community and have been incredible advocates for their peers, along with the Tri Alpha First Generation Student Honor Society. ASMSU commends the board and President Guskowitz for their commitments to support first gen students and provide them with this programming support and space. ASMSU looks forward to working with you all to ensure that the center is fully supportive of and catered to first-gen student success and needs. And then lastly, I want to take a moment to celebrate and recognize the MSU Union Centennial Celebration. The Union has been a place to gather, study, and share community for students for 100 years, which is pretty amazing. And ASMSU is proud to be a heritage sponsor for the year-long celebration of this historic building. I really appreciate the time to speak. Thank you.
Nick?
Hello, my name is Nick Heilman. I'm a fourth year PhD student in the Department of Computational Math Science and Engineering. I will be serving this year as the Vice President of Internal Affairs for the Council of Graduate Students. I'd like to give a couple of updates for what we had kind of done back in April, and then some updates on kind of looking towards the future. I'm happy to announce that our referendum for our tax renewal for our student tax was approved. It was approved with an 87% approval rate with over 350 votes, which is historically very high for us. Our past executive board decided not to have an increase in our student tax. So we're looking forward to continuing to squeeze out every drop of use from the funds that we will be getting. With that said, though, I would like to lift up some of the fears that our graduate and professional students have. First, surrounding financial insecurities. As most of you probably know, graduate and professional students are some of the most strongly impacted for financial insecurity. This can be reflected in the fact that they are majority users of a lot of resources, such as the MSU Student Food Bank and the Student Parent Resource Center. And with the coming uncertainties of research funding cuts, there is going to be added stresses towards these financial insecurities. So we're asking that MSU administration and the Board of Trustees continues to bolster resources such as the Food Bank and the Parent Resource Center to help continue supporting our graduate and professional students, both in the main campus and at our satellite campuses. I would like to also lift up some of the fears surrounding our international student body. Many of our graduate and professional students are international, and there are a lot of fears surrounding problems with visas and being able to maintain their status here as graduate and professional students. So I think one of the big asks that we have from administration and the board is that you continue to stay on top of the cutting-edge information for what's happening, in the federal and state levels and make sure that it's getting to the people that need it. Am I not talking close enough? That need it most. So thank you. With that said, I would like to say that I think that a lot of our success between or from our high approval rate for our tax approval referendum was to do with a lot of our executive board's efforts in supporting our graduate students when it comes to these resources. We pushed a lot to maintain high social events, a lot planned by our director of event planning. These were really great times for us as an executive board to meet and engage with these students, learn about their problems, and help them share solutions that they found on campus. In addition, our graduate welfare committee planned a graduate resource series where we got a lot of these resources in the hands of students and gave that platforms for these resources to teach and engage with our graduate and professional student body. And I think that's really important for our administration and board to be thinking about is creating high approval and buy-in for moving forward, is having touch points like that where you can really engage with the people, both the students, undergrad, graduate, professional, and our faculty, to make sure that you exist as more than just an entity and are actual people. So with that said, I'd like to bring up our Fall Welcome, which is an event that COGS holds every year annually. It's going to be taking place on Saturday, August 23rd this year. It's a great event where we bring in hundreds of our incoming and returning graduate and professional students, sort of as a welcome back for the academic year to kick off. It takes place in the Benefactors Plaza near Chittenden Hall. It's a big cookout where we have games and giveaways, and we bring a lot of the resources that I've mentioned to come and engage and learn about our graduate students and for our graduate and professional students to learn about them. It is a free event open to all graduate and professional students, but I would like to invite the board and administration members to join us as well to help learn about our graduate and professional student body. COGS is looking forward to a great year of scholarship, research, and community building, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. If I could just quickly, I want to thank both Nick and Catherine for accepting these important leadership roles. I'm looking forward to working alongside you over the next academic year. Nick, I want you to know that I have said, having mentored many, many graduate students myself, that being able to recruit and support top-tier graduate students is critical to any research university, and certainly that'll be the case here. We will work hard to support you and our graduate students at Michigan State so we can be that leading global public research university that we aspire toward. And Catherine, thank you. Regarding arts and humanities, I promise you, arts and humanities will thrive at Michigan State University. I'm committed to working alongside our new dean, Stubblefield, who we just officially brought on board today. We'll start July 1st, and I'm committed to a smooth transition with ARCA and Cal, and I think we'll look back in a year from now, and many, many who are concerned about this will, in fact, feel much better, and I hope feel really good about where we landed. So thank you.
Also, I hope you guys take some time this summer to relax. So. With that, I'll turn it over to Angela.
Is this on?
Yes.
Oh, terrific. Thank you. I think I was worried about dropping my laptop there, and I think Jack was probably even more worried. He knows me. So good morning. It's really a delight to be in Traverse City. It's such a beautiful place, and the June Board of Trustees meetings always provide a terrific opportunity for us to see other parts of Michigan and meet with our alumni and supporters and hear from them. So we really appreciate the kind hospitality that we have experienced here in Traverse City.
We are now a month into the summer period for the faculty. While there are many faculty who are teaching over the summer, there are also very many faculty who are fully that are on academic year appointments. So governance activities such as many of our committees, faculty, senate, university council pause for the summer. However, there still have been ongoing activities for the faculty steering committee and the at-large members of the faculty senate and members of these committees who continue to meet as needed regardless of their appointment, with some of these individuals serving the university as volunteers during the summer periods. Faculty are serving on search committees, on the One Health Council, and task forces to provide a number of examples. The at-large members of the Faculty Senate held a retreat in May to begin to plan for the next academic year. And on May 27th, the steering committee passed a resolution about the budget reductions, raising a number of concerns that we have had that we have since discussed with the president and board of trustees yesterday. The detailed information about this is provided at the MSU steering committee website. In terms of a committee update that I would like to share, John Arnie Fleschner provided the board with an update on the work of the Ad Hoc Committee on Institutional Support for Research and Creative Activities. The committee is looking into the various routes that are needed to support research and creative activities across the university and completed a survey of college and departmental leaders to identify needs and challenges. John will provide a full report in November, but one point I want to draw you to is that there are faculty who are being asked to pay out of their own pockets for their academic work. This was reported by 10% of the department chairs in the survey, though I suspect this percentage is actually much higher. As well, while I have mentioned this previously, this survey and the present budgetary and federal funding landscapes indicate the need for additional development activities focused on general research and creative activities support. During this summer, a great number of our faculty are highly engaged in research and creative activity, involving many graduate students and undergraduate students in their work. Some faculty, like Justin St. Charles here, are leading students on a study abroad experience. He's going to Greece. Poor guy. And he's actually going to take a group of our incoming students, so that will be quite an adventure. John Arnie Fleschner here is starting work on a new book. Others of us are working diligently on research in our laboratories with varying numbers of students in our labs. And in cases like this, know that the funding for these students during the summer comes from grants, endowed support, and startup funding, with the majority of this funding coming from federal grants. And in fact, for a large number of our graduate students, they are supported year-round by federal grants. The past 6 months have resulted in a lot of anxiety for many faculty. And this summer, while we are enjoying working with our students, many of us are highly concerned about what the coming months and even years will look like and have many sleepless nights concerned about supporting our research teams. We have already seen what has happened with the cuts to USAID, a loss of MSU personnel, and loss of support of students. Every week, updates are available from our Associate Vice President for Federal Relations, Sarah Walters, providing us with a very long list of federal policies, mandates, and other challenges. Over the past week or so, policies or proposals are continuing to spin. One of them was on having NIH research no longer be permitted to be in medical journals. Instead, that work should be highlighted in government sites. This does not work for academia. A pending freeze on $30 billion of funding to several agencies, one being NSF. And if this comes to fruition, I counted up the dollars and I counted up how much these agencies are funded for. Basically, it's a freeze on everything from specific funders. The ramifications on this are huge. We have hundreds of students and faculty, students in particular, supported by these grants, postdoctoral fellows. These are the types of issues that keep us up at night. I visited Capitol Hill for the 75th anniversary of NSF to represent MSU in May. It is ironic that it was right at the time that many NSF employees were let go, an agency that I can assure you had a light staff for the workload for my own time there. U.S. Congressman Bill Foster, who received his Ph.D. in physics from Harvard and worked at Fermi Lab, spoke. He said that he's so incredibly frustrated that he has felt sick about what was happening to science in universities at this time and expressed his great concern about the future workforce and where they would be coming from if we were going to continue to move down this present pathway. This really impacts many things, national security, the future workforce in Michigan, and all over our country. In speaking with the staff from a number of Michigan legislators, a big proposal is to garner private support for NSF graduate fellowships as a solution. This would be great for the 3 or 4 graduate fellows maximum that we have in areas like chemistry and physics, to provide an example. Out of nearly 500 graduate students in chemistry and physics, what about the other nearly 500 students in these fields alone? These are our worries. We are facing larger challenges than we have ever experienced. On top of this are our own MSU budget challenges. We understand the need to address this. However, we are concerned about the impact as we compete across fields in terms of rankings and reputations of the university. Now, on a far more positive note, in May, 3 members of our faculty were elected to the National Academy of Sciences. Christoph Benning, Jack Liu, and Philip Robertson. They're all terrific, amazing scientists, amazing researchers. And 3 members of the MSU extended family were also elected, 2 former postdocs and 1 former faculty member. This is a remarkable achievement and really terrific to have this record number of MSU faculty and family recognized by membership in a single year. So, to close, I want to thank Jack Lipton for his service as Vice Chair of the Faculty Senate. He has been a great partner in the leadership of faculty, and he has certainly kept things interesting. And sometimes quite an adventure. You all know Jack. But truly with a focus on faculty and making MSU better. Jack is not going away. He has 2 more years as an at-large member on the leadership team of Faculty Senate, and I look forward to continuing to work with him. I also welcome John Arnie Fleschner as our new Vice Chair of the Faculty Senate. I look forward to working with him in this new role. And finally, I thank Interim Provost Yetsko for all he has done for MSU and in terms of working with faculty governance. We've enjoyed working with you, and we wish you the very best. So thank you.
Thank you.
So I think we now will turn to Board Secretary Fletcher for...
Not quite yet. President Guskowitz. I believe we are at the Chairperson Tebe's report and then trustee comments.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
I don't know what they mean. It's me. It's me. Thank you. First, I'd like to begin by saying how grateful we are for the warm welcome we've received here in Traverse City. It's been an eventful few days. I'm exhausted, but we've had a lot of great visits, underscoring our community partners and empowering our community partnerships that are empowering our students and serving our state. So a big thank you to everyone that hosted and visited with us. I also would like to thank our Department of Police and Public Safety, our University Communications and Marketing's and IT support staff. Thank you for your invaluable assistance at this retreat. We appreciate you guys all taking the time to help with everything, even the things that are not necessarily your job. So we appreciate you all going above and beyond to support us over the last few days. I also want to thank the team that helped plan the retreat. Jackie's over there. She's always hiding. She's off camera. But, Jackie, thank you so much for everything that you've done for us and continue to do. And Stefan as well. Thank you both so much for putting all the time and energy into making this a success. We look forward to continuing to work alongside the community here to uplift this beautiful region. One way we will do that is by continuing to be, as the president likes to say, a talent activator for the state. Last month, I had the privilege of celebrating alongside more than 10,000 eager graduates and their families. Many of these bright minds will be joining the thousands of degreed Spartans alums who call this region home. I'd also like to extend a big thank you to the MSU Research Foundation for designating $75 million over the next 8 years to support the university's comprehensive campaign. Yeah, thank you. This will undoubtedly propel the university's vision for a far better world. I also want to echo the president's thank you to Provost Yetsko for all of your work over the last few years. It's been a pleasure to get to know you and work with you, and I know you're not going anywhere, so I look forward to continuing to see you around MSU. Lastly, I'd like to recognize our amazing MSU Museum Director, Devin Ackman. He's an innovator and a strategic leader who was recently elected chair of the board of the American Alliance of Museums, which is someone that works at a museum. That's a big deal, so congratulations to Devin.
That concludes my report.
Thank you very much, Chair Tebe. Vice Chair Scott.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. So glad to see that the sun's trying to peep through. I'm going to talk about Spartan spirit. And as a proud Spartan, I care deeply about our service and our outreach mission. So it is with true pleasure that I get to talk about our experience here in Traverse City today in the picturesque Traverse City and the mission point that we were in yesterday. I took a boat ride for the first time in about 6 years and didn't get sick yesterday. And so it has been an incredible experience. In Grand Traverse County alone, our economic impact is close to $57 million, with another $3.3 million spent on local businesses. It is also true that here we have so many people that are connected with the Spartan community. And they had a prepared comment for me talking about the Northwest Michigan Horticulture Research Center that allegedly we were supposed to have visited, but we did not. But we did get to visit Black Star Farm. So I did want to talk a little bit about the opportunity that we had yesterday to actually go there to meet with one of the directors there and to see their beautiful vineyard, get to taste their wines. Several of us purchased quite a few on our way out, and to really hear about the trailblazers that Black Star Farms in particular were, and some of the great work that is being done by our agri-research that is being done here in this area. And I got to ask a question about what makes this area so special that they can grow the wonderful grapes that they have. So learning about the climate and the way that our Great Lakes system is and where they are positioned within the state of Michigan and how that allows them to be able to harvest some of the best grapes and the best wine that you could ever have. And so I would encourage anyone that does not have to go right back to East Lansing or wherever to maybe take some time to go and see what we've got to display here in this beautiful part of Michigan, as we've got so many vineyards and so many great industries here. We even got to hear from Ben LaCrosse, who talked about the cherries and how his industry provides. And so it's really interesting, and I have enjoyed that. I don't know what I would have learned at the Horticulture Center. I'm sure it would have been great. So I can't share with that. But I will go on to talk about this week. We've been focused on MSU's impact on the vibrant region. As Michigan State University, we continue to serve the common good for all Michiganders. Today I'd like to share a couple of examples. First, a shout out to MSU Henry Ford Health, researchers working to understand our maternal health effects, childhood obesity. The groundbreaking work could transform healthcare for children and, in fact, people of all ages. And second, a shout out to the medical researchers at Tamara Reed Bush, Justin Scott, the makers of SitSense, which is MSU's Innovation of the Year. The remarkable chair is designed to prevent low or no mobility patients from getting pressure sores, and otherwise those things are known as bed sores, something that many of us who have maybe loved ones or people that are friends of ours that suffer from diseases where they cannot move. I have an aunt and a cousin that both suffer from MS and are basically bedridden. So I know that the infections that they can get from those bed sores, it's really horrible. And we are really, I think, in a wonderful position here at MSU to be at the forefront of some of the research and some of these issues. Another powerful example is MSU's impact that comes from All in Campus Democracy Challenge. The national organization recently recognized our own president, Kevin Guskowitz, and student Lucas Gravett for their efforts to promote inclusion, civic participation, and leadership on campus. And so we want to congratulate you once again on that, Kevin. And for my non-prepared remarks, I'm going to look at Thomas. I get a little sad because Thomas and I started off like this a little bit, I think. But I've grown to love Thomas Yitzko, and getting to know you over the years has been indeed an honor to me. I consider you a friend, and I know you have been with us through some tumultuous times, and you have weathered the storm, and you have led with integrity, with respect. And when I talk to faculty, they really admire you. I've not
ever heard a bad thing about you, Thomas, from faculty that have had the pleasure of working with you in your position. People really look up to you, and we appreciate the leadership that you have provided us. And you weren't just a placeholder. You actually did some really great things, some wonderful hires, and we wish to thank you for that. And I don't think you're going far, so I'm hoping that we will continue to see you around, that you will continue to stay engaged with us here on the board. So just thank you for your friendship and your leadership.
Thank you.
Yes. I'd also like to shout out Stefan and Jackie. I don't know where Jackie is. The only thing she probably didn't do right is she didn't make sure that we got to the horticultural, what is this, the Northwest Michigan Horticultural Research Center. Okay. All right, so whatever. We didn't make it there, Jackie, but everything else that Jackie planned, we made it to. And I sometimes think that we have unsung heroes. Stefan gets all the credit a lot, but I think, like, you are the Bonnie to his Clyde, and the two of you together make things, not the criminal part, but you know what I'm saying. Okay, sorry. Maybe that wasn't a good example. But I just appreciate, Jackie, everything that you've done to make this retreat work. You and Stefan together offered a lot of opportunities for us to learn and also engage with alum and donors. I got to meet some incredible donors last night. I wish I could tell you guys some of the stories I heard. But it was just a remarkable experience bringing us here to Traverse City. So I wish to thank you both for all of the time, I'm sure, and the stress that getting something together like this has caused. So thank you and congratulations. It was well done. I would also like to congratulate our newest deans, Dean Dom and Stubblefield. I don't know if I've met Dean Stubblefield yet. Was he at Cow's House? Yeah, I don't think so. I look forward to meeting him soon, but congratulations to both of them. I wanted to thank Dr. Rose. I need to just start speaking when the research speakers come because they always leave, and then I always save my comments to my public comments. But I really enjoyed the work and the information that she provided to us today. So if you could just extend by, and I'll reach out to her on my own. And then I wanted to just wish everyone a wonderful and restful summer. We're at the end of the school year. I know most of us are looking forward to getting some rest and relaxation. Just thanking you all for your service. It's been a wonderful 3 days with you all. So thank you. That concludes my comments.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Scott. Next, we'll move into the next phase of trustee comments, starting with Trustee Kanacki Jefferson.
Thank you. My comments will be brief. I'm just going to touch on a couple of MSU milestones and then also express some gratitude. So first, milestones. As a former law faculty member, it's with considerable pride that I want to note that MSU Law remains number one in the nation for its moot court team. That's the second time in 2 years. And I also want to commend MSU Law's partnership with the Immigration Law Clinic and the psych students. We're graduate students in psychology partner to provide free evaluations for asylum seekers, removing barriers for some of our most vulnerable neighbors. Another point of pride, so as a trustee, I also serve on our foundation board. Our trustees rotate off and on that board. And so another point of pride I'd like to mention relates to the MSU Foundation Board. We launched our first statewide jobs board focused on connecting talent to startups in our venture portfolios, and so that's an initiative of the MSU Research Foundation, and it's just one of the many, many ways that MSU is fueling the innovation economy throughout the state of Michigan. And now I want to say just a few things about gratitude, and I'll start by being grateful for our president, and in particular, I want to thank you for putting your trust and faith in me and asking me to serve on our search committee for our new provost. And I am really looking forward to working with Laura Lee as she joins us in August. And thank you for everything that you're doing to lead this institution, but thank you in particular for asking me to step into that role. That leads me to more gratitude and a little bit of sadness, which is thanking you, Thomas, for the opportunity to work together and learn so much from you. I think Trustee Scott said integrity and respect. I would echo that and also add wisdom that you lead with.
It has been an honor to serve with you. We will miss you in this role, but we know that you will be close by. So thank you for everything that you've done. Very grateful to have worked with you. I'm also very appreciative of all of my colleagues on the Board of Trustees, and especially after this retreat, I will just echo the thanks that have been given to Stefan and Jackie for making all of this happen, and I want to also echo the thanks that my colleagues gave earlier during the report from the Committee on Budget and Finance. Trustee Pierce, I know you have worked so hard to navigate and lead us through the budget, and so thank you for that, along with your work with Lisa Frace. So I just want to add my gratitude to that as well. And then on a personal note, my husband happens to be in the audience today, and that doesn't happen very often for me. I think maybe never at a Board of Trustees meeting, even though I've been on this board since 2019. And so some of you, but maybe not all of you, know that my husband, Wallace Jefferson, is a proud James Madison alum, and that education set him on a path that would lead him to become the first African-American Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Texas. And that is, oh, thank you. And it's his lived experience, the lived experience of his son, who also is a James Madison graduate and also now pursuing law. It's their lived experience that is what commits me to thinking about the lived experience of every single student at Michigan State and how we as trustees work to make sure that they are getting everything that they need to do what our president is always telling us that we are doing now, which is to lead with uncommon will for our far better world. And so thank you, Wallace, not just for being here today, but also for making so much space in our lives to continue the service that we're doing. And so I'm walking away from this retreat feeling a lot of gratitude for everyone in this room. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Trustee Baylor.
Thank you, Secretary Fletcher. You know, I got to tell you, it's beyond meaningful being here in this community representing Michigan State University. 25 years ago, I used to live up here, probably just a half mile from where you sit right now. And all of these buildings that we've been enjoying during these last few days were empty, vacant, in some stage of disrepair, with, you know, the community asking, what the heck are we going to do with this? Area 50, as they called it. The old state mental hospital, and many of these buildings date back to the 1890s. And where some saw blight, others saw opportunity and created something great. And so I want to compliment this community. I think the gentleman's name was Ray Minervini 25 years ago. I don't know if he was the catalyst. I don't know if he's still around. But, you know, what you see here is a true testament to what vision followed by execution can accomplish. And we've enjoyed this up here. Our firstborn was born here at Munson Hospital, which is a wonderful institution here. My Spartan was born there back in 2001. Yeah, and we got our rescue dog at the Cherryland Humane Society up here. And if you know dogs, you know. And we used to hike no more than a 9-iron shot in the hills and the wonderful hiking trails right behind here. We got to spend some time at Great Lakes Maritime Academy, which has a wonderful new building where I was an instructor for 2 years long ago. And that's part, of course, of Northwestern Michigan College, which is a wonderful resource for people from Northern Michigan where you can actually finish your 4-year degree in many cases right here through partnerships with institutions such as ours. And so it really, really is beyond meaningful, again, to be back here as part of the delegation representing Michigan State. And we did have a roadshow here this week, and I won't. Everyone's been complimented here, but it really was something. And not everything goes smoothly, but it always goes the right way, right? We figure it out. I would like to say that a thank you, if it hasn't been said already, to our hosts at 20 Fathoms, you know, the business incubator space on Front Street, our wonderful hosts at Trattoria Stella at dinner the other day, which is a stone's throw away, and the folks at Black Star Farms. We could have stayed there and drank wine all day. On the subject of Traverse City, too, and much has been said of the health presentation we got. Rebecca Weeks, who's a College of Osteopathic Medicine graduate, is now practicing in Traverse City, and she's already making a difference in her community, living proof of MSU's mission to serve the people of our state. And I would add that anytime we can come back up here to have a meeting, I'm game. And I would like to say, like,
focus on the problem solving, right? Like, we've had a very meaningful time up here. You know, we as trustees try to conduct our oversight. You know, President Guskowitz and his staff fulfill their role. We challenge them. They get us answers and try to respond. The members of the community challenge us as trustees. The press does their job, you know, to try to bring light to things. And in the end result, some of this, I'll call it healthy friction, is good because we get to a better understanding of where we are, even if it's a place that is not ideal for many. And we're going to continue to do that. And nothing has been more challenging than these budget discussions, I'll tell you. So I'll close with just saying thank you again, Traverse City, for your hospitality. Thank you for being a home to us and our family when we were starting our family. And, you know, we look forward to a great summer, and I look forward to engagement with the student representatives as we go forward. It's an honor to be our board student liaison. And it's also an honor, you know, to serve and work with my fellow trustees and the administration. And I'll close with that, and I'll turn it over to the next trustee. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next speaker is Trustee Vassa.
Turn it right over. So Traverse City has been awesome. There's been, so first let me just say thank you to the Opera House folks. That visit was great. The facilities are unique, and that was the only meal I've eaten since I've been in Traverse City, the only meal. It was delicious. I've really honestly been eating chocolate-covered cherries, 3 3/4 bags. Like, I've gained about 6 pounds on this trip only because I've subsisted on chocolate-covered cherries. I mean, Traverse City owes me nothing in terms of cherries and chocolate. This has been a great visit. And I do want to thank, people have said it over and over, the people behind the scenes, Dr. Fletcher and Jackie. You don't even know the number of times that they've had to bail me out and come get me, and because I'm consistently lost, or I have an emergency, or it's just they take care of me in a way that they shouldn't have to, and I just appreciate the grace that you all give us, particularly me, and your planning. And I want to thank James Bender. He's not here, but James Bender is kind of like the head of IT. I don't know really well what he does. I'll just tell you this. So I'm on the way to the press conference for the new AD. Great job on that selection, by the way. I'm really, really excited about AD Bat. I was on my way, and it was kind of sprinkly a little bit, and I just asked this guy for a ride. I didn't know him, but he looked friendly. You know, I can generally tell people's countenance whether or not, you know, they're trustworthy. But I was like, hey, so can you give me a ride? He's like, cool, fine. And I got in the car with him to drive me. And he was in charge of IT, James Bender. And so I was telling him, man, you got a star crew that takes care of the board. Jeremy, Ron, Chad, they're completely nails. Like, they sturdy. And again, they'll just come and know that it's going to be an emergency over here. And they'll just come and get me together. I am so appreciative of James for not being a serial killer and also for his team, right? I made it. I'm alive. And James got me there, but he also has a star-studded team, and I'm just really grateful to you all. Thank you so much. Then I wanted to just quickly say that there are several great Spartans that I want to highlight. The first, and I'll try not to tear up a little bit, but Dr. Lee June is retiring after an extraordinary 25 years of service, scholarship, and unwavering dedication to justice at Michigan State University. One of the first people I spoke with when I became a trustee was Dr. June, and he downloaded me on everything I need to know, gave me great words of advice, and prayed for me. Right. We went to breakfast, and he prayed for me, and his wife prayed for me, and they continue to pray for me. I'm sad he's leaving. From marching with Dr. King to mentoring generations of Spartans, even my favorite Spartan, Lucius, he shaped this institution with a legacy rooted in compassion, equity, and transformation, and I'm grateful to his service. Likewise, let me recognize Dr. Eunice Foster's remarkable legacy at MSU. Her 42-year career not only advanced in global research in agriculture, but also laid the foundation for inclusive excellence through mentorship, advocacy, and the founding of the National Organization Minorities in Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Related Science. And the last Spartan I want to honor is David Mott. David Mott, I met when I was running for trustee, and he, like, grilled me. And I was like, calm down, sir. But he's a super Spartan, one of those people who you can call in the middle of the night and say, we need a donation for this. We need towels, paper towels, or anything that you need from this fellow, he would give it. And he passed away yesterday. Young man. And my heart goes out to MSUBA and the entire Spartan Nation, but also to his family and friends. I also want to celebrate the impact of Dr. Standifer Barrett, an alumni and alumna and MSU clinical professor working with Henry Ford Health in Detroit. Her work in internal medicine exemplifies MSU's commitment to community health. I also want to talk about the Spartan bus tour. Along with trustees Behar, Cook, Baylo, and T-Bay, I joined the Spartan bus tour in Detroit. It was like a 15-minute drive. I was super grateful for that. But you all helped me because, you know, my Detroit card gets challenged often. I'm not from Detroit. I live in Detroit. And I get challenged all the time. Like, one of the things that I get challenged on is the fact that I had not been to the Motown Museum. So MSU has helped me in my credibility as a Detroiter because that museum visit was awesome, phenomenal. I had never been there. So that has helped me. I need MSU to help me with all the Detroit hustles, the Tamia hustle. You probably don't even know what I'm talking about. The Tamia hustle is one thing. My card is still in jeopardy, but at least the Motown Museum is off the list. And boots on the ground, that's another hustle. If you all can help me with that. Okay, either way. Thank you for your commitment to Detroit, President Guskowitz. That commitment I've pushed over the last 4 years, and it's come to fruition in many ways. And I appreciate that. I'm sorry we missed the Juneteenth celebration. Since I've been a trustee, I've never missed it since I joined this board. So I thank everyone who worked so hard to make that day special at MSU, and I thank specifically the MSU leadership who continue to stay committed to celebrating the full spectrum of our storied, illustrious past and our present, even in this political moment. I just appreciate that we have been unwavering. Lastly, Provost Yaitsko. So, Provost Yaitsko and I have had an interesting history. One thing that I do want to say that I would agree with other folks who characterize him as integral, I respect Provost Yaitsko because he's integral. I like when people say what they do and do what they say. I appreciate that. Even if what you say and do, I don't agree with, that you are reliable and that I can count on you to be who you are and deal fairly with that, whatever that brings, I respect. And I thank you for sitting with me. You know, I like the water. I listen to the water. I would never get in the water, let's be clear. But sitting there, listening to the water, and talking with you over a cigar was probably the highlight of this trip after the cherries, because the cherries were a bomb. But thinking with you about what is next for, and don't talk to me about the cigar, just don't look at me, trust me, just look away. Talking to you about your commitment to this university and your next moves in the university, I just want to thank you for your service. And hopefully, I apologize that we had not talked earlier, but hopefully we will talk more in the future. And I just wanted to say to Nick, your comment about us not being an entity and us being like for real human beings is really important. Sometimes this is a dehumanizing position to be in, and folks don't recognize that we are, you know, real people. I'm a first-gen student, the first in my immediate family and extended family to graduate, the only one to have a PhD, right? That your commitment to the marginalized folks that continue to need our support has been documented, and I pay attention, and I thank you. And lastly, your green suit, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I end the same way that I always do. The same admonishment, the same plea, the same invitation for you to rest. Take this summer. It's been a roller coaster this year. Rest, restore, rejuvenate, come back relaxed and ready. Go green.
Go white.
Thank you very much. Trustee Denno.
Yeah, thanks. I'd like to also thank the Traverse City community, thank Grand Traverse County and the surrounding communities for opening their doors to us, and really eye-opening, beautiful community. I haven't been here in forever, so I really appreciate that. I appreciate all the hard work Jackie Vandenbosch put in. And do I have to call you Dr. Fletcher? Can I just call you Stefan?
Sure, yeah.
For everything? You guys really make this a lot easier, and I know we're a pain, and I really appreciate all your hard work on this. I know there's others behind the scenes, too. So I want to say, I think it was about a month ago, I had a really good meeting with some of our Middle East, North African faculty members, Dr. Linda Saeed, Dr. Mohammed Khalil, Dr. Salim Al-Habash, learning about all the amazing work they're doing and trying to support them. So that was really great. I just really, really fortunate to have them here. And also want to give a shout-out to our three faculty members who got recognized or appointed by the National Academy of Science. Again, I want to thank you, Kevin, President Guskowitz. Since our last board meeting, we've faced some challenges, some disruptions, some slings and arrows. And, you know, you've really been a steady, calm hand. I mean, we really could have freaked out, for lack of a better phrase. I just really, really appreciate you being deliberative and thinking through the stuff and not overreacting, which is what we totally could have done. And thank you for that. Again, I'd like to thank all our first responders, especially everyone in law enforcement, for all they do for our communities. And I want to give a shout out to one of our fellow trustees, someone who I'm developing a good friendship with, and that's Trustee Michael Balow. After our last board meeting, there were some newspaper stories that contained some, I would use the word, inaccuracies about some of the stuff that I said and voted on. And, Mike, you publicly supported me. You had my back. You didn't have to do that, and that really means a lot. And I really appreciate your integrity, and I appreciate your willingness to do that and to do the right thing. And I love the fact that you do ask challenging questions, and you've really been a great addition to this board, as have you, Rebecca Bahar-Cook. So, thank you.
Well, thank you. And talking of Trustee Bahar-Cook, you're next.
Thanks, everybody. You've already heard from President Guskowitz and my fellow trustees how great it was to see so many Spartan supporters and alumni running businesses, fostering economic development, improving access to health care, and giving back to this lovely community. I wanted to add my thanks to that as well. I also wanted to thank both the university staff who planned an informative program for us during the board work session and retreat, and to all the local Spartans who hosted us at various locations in the past few days. It really is great to see Spartan Nation's footprint all over the state. I did want to just quickly talk about graduation. So I had the great privilege of participating in many graduation ceremonies last month, and I wanted to extend my heartfelt congratulations to all of our new alumni. I mean, that's why we're here. And one of the most moving moments for me, and this is where I'm going to get emotional, is watching all of those first-generation souls walk across the stage.
It was a powerful testament to their determination and to the support that they received from their family and friends who helped them reach that milestone. So kudos to all of our new graduates. Watching thousands of students cross the stage was a vivid reminder of the vital partnership between Michigan State University and the state of Michigan. It reaffirmed MSU's mission to advance knowledge and transform lives by providing outstanding undergraduate, graduate, and professional education. So I'm very proud of that, and I just wanted to give a shout out to all those folks. Additionally, I was also, as mentioned, on the Spartan bus tour. I am a born Detroiter, so I do get some of that street cred. But what was really exciting for me, and it was just like the general interest that the MSU faculty had and the staff had for Detroit's resurgence, having the opportunity to showcase our region's rich history and vibrant culture while highlighting MSU's meaningful contributions to its success, was both a personal honor and a powerful reminder of the university's impact. MSU's community engagement and outreach is not only deeply appreciated by me, but also by thousands of alumni who are actively shaping and benefiting from this important work. I saw our outreach mission in action, and I really appreciate, too, all the staff who worked behind the scenes to make that happen and look seamless, but I know it was probably a nightmare. I also had the unique opportunity to participate in MSU's AI Summit in early May and witness firsthand the collaborative spirit driving innovation in AI across our campus. Honestly, it was one of the most exciting days on campus to be a trustee. I got to participate in faculty discussions on AI's impact on society and workforce readiness, and I look forward to learning more about how MSU will be addressing and incorporating advancing AI research and AI-enhanced research, transforming teaching and learning in AI, and AI in university operations and administration. Dr. Wilson and Trustee Denno stole my thunder on the three faculty members who received that highest honors in science with the National Academy of Sciences, but I do want to say also Jack Liu, Philip Robertson, and Christoph Benning, congratulations for that extraordinary achievement. And as faculty liaison, I'd also like to take a moment to recognize the accomplishments of some of our other faculty. Congratulations to Matt Grossman, who was recently named to the 2025 class of the Andrew Carnegie Fellows. And finally, let's take a moment to recognize Professor Michael Deese of the College of Music, who was awarded a Guggenheim Fellowship, and Professor Nicholas Myers, elected to the National Academy of Kinesiology. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Trustee Behar-Cook. I believe that concludes sort of trustees who wanted to provide comments this morning. So now we will move on to public participation. Just prior to that, I'm going to apologize. I'm going to need to hand the gavel to Chair Tebay. I have promised my graduating high school senior daughter that I would get back to for her graduation from high school. She's worked hard. And so and she is going to be a Spartan. And so with that, I'm going to pass the gavel for the remainder of the meeting to Chair Tebay. And thanks, everyone. And I apologize that I have to leave. But
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much, President Guskowitz. And Chair Tebay, commensurate with the board's sort of existing practice, if you could just pass the gavel along to Interim Provost Yaitsko, that would be fantastic, just to administer the rest of the meeting as the responsible administrator. Okay, so that being said, we will now proceed to the public participation on other items portion of the meeting. Each individual who has signed up to speak will have 3 minutes to address the board. You will hear the buzzer at the 30-second mark, not necessarily with this timer, but you will hear a buzzer at the end when your comments have concluded. Please do not exceed your allotted time, and note that persons scheduled to speak may not cede all or part of their time to other individuals or read statements on behalf of others.
We will now hear from Stephen Linder, followed by Colter Moritok. Stephen is appearing via Zoom. Can you hear me, Stephen?
I can, thank you.
Please begin your comments.
Yes, thank you very much. I was here before the board 2 months ago, and I made a very specific request that the president and the board pass a policy defining anti-Semitism and a policy to deal with consequences of people that commit anti-Semitic hate crimes. And I can tell you in my 47 years as a political operative and owning a political consulting company that nothing vague ever gets done without rising to the moment. And I'm not sure that we're there yet. A lot has happened in the last 2 months. Jews around the country are being hunted and slaughtered, shot in the head in Washington, D.C., Jewish governor's house firebombed, and Jews burned alive in Colorado. Absolutely pathetic and disgusting, and it's risen to an existential threat. The Congress of the United States just voted 400-0 to pass policy condemning anti-Semitism and condemning the Boulder, Colorado attack. And this is all as a precursor to the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act. The university received a letter from Congressman Barrett making a very specific request to pass an anti-Semitism policy. And to say that the response was underwhelming and lacking any action is really an understatement. So, thinking that things needed to be ramped up, I appealed to my allies who set me up with a meeting in the White House, and I met with, through the Deputy Chief of Staff's office, the political director, and talked about the policy. And basically, I came away with, universities are either going to set an example or they're going to be made an example of. They're very aware of the organizing, at least among student faculty groups to organize the Big Ten to challenge the Trump administration. And they asked me how things were going at Michigan State, and I told them we're working through the process. I think that my university is going to step up. They asked me to stay in touch with them to track progress and reminded everybody that while there's no quid pro quo, a lot of universities are facing funding losses, and it would be a good time to put themselves on the right side of the ledger. The other thing that they mentioned is they are going to go after foreign students who break the law in committing hate crimes and protests. I see that my time is up, and I urge the university to adopt this policy with all possible haste.
Thank you, Stephen, for your comments. Our next speaker is Colter Moritok, followed by Zadok Milner. Colter, are you with us? Hello, good morning. Yep, still by 5 minutes. Please proceed with your comments.
Good morning, everyone. I am a cook at Brody Hall, and today I bring you a report on civil literacy from within the belly of this great beast. First, some ugly facts. My unit manager told me that I do not need to think or worry about how I can support my coworkers if habeas corpus is suspended because my unit manager's gender and race made her personally unafraid of our federal government. This manager used personal identity politics to silence civil discourse in the workplace. Over the next week, I was first ambushed by HR and told not to discuss politics or civics in the workplace, and also that I might not belong here. Second, managers were warned not to talk about civil matters in the workplace. And third, one of my unit manager's assistants physically assaulted me in the workplace by slapping things out of my hand, pushing me aggressively in the shoulder, and walking away smiling. Civics is the discussion of how we relate to one another horizontally, while politics is the discussion of how we relate to our government vertically. This workplace, being a piece of government, is not a venue to talk politics. But the corporate person seems to have confused politics with civics, and now MSU is using this conflation as an opportunity to suppress the free speech of its staff. The question I bring today is what follows the death of civics in our public sector. Life on Earth has forever found itself incorporated into more and more complex systems, from proteins to cellular to multicellular life, from scattered tribes to dense cities. It is our destiny to become something greater than ourselves. But unlike ourselves of proteins, we have language with which to commonly communicate and control the steersmen of our public institutions. Our charter itself compels us to become something greater. But lately it seems that the blocks being chosen by the university for its constructions are of the authoritarian variety. As our civil liberties erode, the state of Michigan is slowly losing its kinesthetic sense over its most vital constitutional organs, and we, the people, are losing control of our own body. What could follow the death of our public civics other than the death of our civilization as we once knew it? Cannibalized by private equity, incorporated into a machine by autocrats too overworked to read our constitution or corporate charter. If we are to use our position to empower the future of Michigan, we have to enable civil discourse by bringing civics back as a core piece of our identity. I have solutions to propose for how we can use technology to nurture a diverse garden of civil liberties and virtual space and not the quads behind Wells Hall. In essence, we can use an emerging radio technologies to bring ownership over a decentralized means of mass communication to the students, staff, and faculty alike. While I am running out of time here, the next time you visit Brody, I invite all of you to demonstrate with me what a civilized and productive discourse can really look like and how a little sunshine can really benefit for the whole community. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Zadok Milner, followed by Andaluna Bochia. Zadok.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Okay, please proceed with your comments.
Okay. Good morning, Board of Trustees and the Office of the President. My name is Zadok Milner, and I'm a recent MSU graduate. During the presentation and discussion of maintaining Michigan clean water, I couldn't help but think of how 30 million tons of carbon dioxide have been generated by the complex since October 2023. And the explosive power equivalent of two nuclear bombs have been assailed on a landmass the size of Detroit. Gaza has no more clean water, no more clean air, no more universities left, and an estimated 80% of all deaths have been civilian casualties. I'm here to join my peers in reading the names of identified casualties, starting with the youngest. In doing this, I urge you not to give in to the false narrative that education must remain neutral in the face of genocide. Michigan State University is not an unthinking, unfeeling entity. You all are the human beings at the head of it, and you all have the power to decide how the university responds to this particular moment in history, or if it will choose not to. But know that what is happening in Palestine right now is a direct threat to MSU's global mission. Make a vocal effort to support Palestinian and MENA community students. Do not accept another cent of Israel's money through the purchase bond. Allocate a portion of endowment funds to invest in humanitarian aid. Drop the charges against student activists, none of whom engaged in destructive or violent acts prior to their arrests. Thank you and know their names. Mohammed Amer Yasser Al-Masri, less than a year old. Jude Mohammed Noor Hassanin, less than a year old. Mohammed Ibrahim Muin Abu Al-Ros, less than a year old. Hamza Yassin Mohammed Abu Jabir, less than a year old. Habiba Firas Mustafa Al-Jadi, less than a year old. Kanari Mutasim Mahmoud Akil, less than a year old. Mohammed Marwan Ismail Abu Al-Aish, less than a year old. Yasser Salah Yasser Al-Dalo, less than a year old. Carmel Allah Walid Hamdan, less than a year old. Maria Ahmed Nayef Rayan, less than a year old. Wassam Mohammed Jamal Wisha, less than a year old. Ibrahim Khamis Bassam Al-Shayr, less than a year old. Sama Jihad Jamil Wukhat. Ahmed Mahmoud Ismail Irhim, less than a year old. Rakan Basel Mahmoud Abu Al-Khair, less than a year old. Hamza Yassin Mohammed Abu Jabir, less than a year old.
Thank you very much, Zadok, for your comments. Our next speaker is Andaluna Bochia, followed by Ariel Casio. Andaluna, are you with us? Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
Using my reading glasses here. Good morning. My name is Andaluna Borchila. I teach in James Madison College, and I am a member of the organizing committee of the Union of Tenure System Faculty. Members of the BOT, I thank you again for adopting the neutrality resolution in 2021. UTSF declared a majority in December of 2023 and presented a reasonable bargaining unit to the administration in January 2024. We now need a demonstrable commitment from the admin to finally move collaboratively in recognizing our bargaining unit and in a card check process that respects the resolution, the work we have done in organizing broadly and deeply across this campus, and the will and voice of a clear majority of our tenure system faculty who have signed authorization cards. It is quite perplexing when we consider the following. On the one hand, administration has invested resources installing the recognition of our union, and they have justified delays through invoking the complexity of MSU and the uniqueness of colleges and departments and responsibilities. On the other, they have decided to unilaterally impose sweeping across-the-board cuts to take effect in a matter of weeks with little concern for the uniqueness and complexity of this institution and for the perspective of those who work and learn here. Our MSU community deserves so much better, educators deserve so much better, and we are fighting for this. Even as UTSF recognition has been delayed, we have achieved recognition as a fully chartered local of the MEA, and we have responded to attacks on higher education in solidarity with other unions. And while MSU administration has shut faculty out of the budget process, the educators across this campus have raised our voice in department and college meetings, in a special meeting and resolution of the steering committee, in statements and joint actions. We demand transparency, accountability, and shared governance. You must halt these across-the-board cuts. The MSU community have a right to the data from which you deem them necessary and to a full line item budget, not the one that I saw at 11:45 p.m. last night when it was posted. If cuts must be made, then we need a different timeline and a different process that ensures real involvement in faculty, staff, and students before decisions are made. There are clear, responsible alternatives to cuts that weaken the academic core, starting with administrative and discretionary capital projects. Our MSU resources need to be invested in education, educators, and students. Money invested in lawyers to fight unionizing faculty, in administrative bloat, and in executive management salaries will not make MSU better or better equipped to stand up for higher education. Collaboration, solidarity, and having another union on campus will. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Andaluna. Our next speaker is Ariel Casillo, followed by Anna Pegler-Gordon. Ariel, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I'm a little short. My name is Ariel Casio. I am an assistant professor in the College of Human Medicine and an active member of the Union of Tenure System Faculty. I am not on the Union Organizing Committee. I am speaking as a rank and file member of the Union because it is important that you hear my perspective on the impact of union recognition on everyday lives of faculty. I have been following the unionizing process since I joined the faculty in the fall of 2023. I've been strengthened by the talent, tenacity, and solidarity of my colleagues across the university. I've been frustrated by the administration's repeated stalling techniques and refusal to recognize a clear and compelling card count. I signed my card, I meant it, and I want it recognized. You have heard already many arguments regarding the university budget and will likely hear more, including ideas for fair allocation of budget cuts and demands for transparency of the budgeting process. Related to these points, I will add that the administration is wasting money hiring union-busting lawyers. If we need to cut line items from the budget, I suggest cutting administration legal costs, fighting a losing battle. Faculty voice is strong at Michigan State University, and we will be recognized. I appreciate the board's 2021 resolution to ensure the university's position of neutrality on any collective bargaining activities, to be cooperative in the determination and recognition of bargaining units, and to set notification of agreements. Yet the administration is not honoring this resolution, neither in its wasteful spending on union-busting legal representation, nor in its communications via faculty-wide listservs regarding the recognition and arbitration process. I appreciate the trustees pushing the administration to follow university neutrality agreements and resolutions and look forward to finding solutions together. Thank you for your time and for the opportunity to provide this comment. That's all the time I'll take.
Thank you so much, Ariel. Our next speaker is Anna Pegler-Gordon, followed by Robert Malechka. Anna, over to you.
MSU is a large institution. But I have always sought to work in the small spaces within MSU, as these are some of the best places to build strong and meaningful connections with students. I teach in the James Madison College and in the Asian Pacific American Studies program within the College of Social Science, the smallest of the ethnic studies programs on campus. As trustees, you work on a large scale. Today you passed a huge budget, putting your stamp of approval on cuts of $150 million across the university. At your April meeting, you approved $150 million to build a new sports stadium as part of the Gateway District. You are told about the big picture. But today I want to tell you about a few little things that have directly impacted the students whom I teach and mentor. I lead a funded study abroad that is designed specifically for first-year students who can't otherwise afford to travel overseas. The program is transformational for these underserved and mostly first-gen students. It changes how they see the world and their place within it. It costs just a few thousand dollars for each student enrolled, and I was scheduled to teach it this spring. But it has been ended due to your budget. The Asian Pacific American Studies program, where I also teach and serve on the executive board, has been searching for a director throughout this last year. But this search has been put on hold until the fall. The program serves as a vital learning space for students to understand the histories and experiences of Asians in America. It is a critical research space for faculty who are almost always the only ones in their departments focusing on Asian American studies. The director is essential to the success of the program and costs less than $25,000 a year. But this search is on hold due to your budget cuts. As I said, these are little things. They are certainly very small parts of MSU's budget, but they have a substantial impact on the success of students and faculty. I want you to understand that these small cuts are repeated again and again across every program and every department in every college in the university. The board has to pause new infrastructure projects and seriously address extraordinary and unnecessary administrative bloat, such as the more than $1 million that you increased to the president's office, a 60% increase that makes it very easy to absorb 9% cuts. My students, our students, are only here for a few years. The university will carry on, but they will never have those transformational opportunities.
So thank you. Our next speaker is Robert Malechka, followed by David Hogan. Robert, good afternoon.
Thank you. I am Rob Malechka, and this August will mark my 30th anniversary as an MSU tenure system faculty member. I, like those who spoke before me, I am also a member of the Union of Tenure System Faculty. I support the union's three pillars of voice, fairness, and respect. Towards that end, the UTS Organizing Committee lends our full support to the voice of the Faculty Senate, Steering Committee, and their resolution passed May 27th. We ask that in the spirit of voice, fairness, and respect, that that resolution be sent to all tenured system faculty, if not the entire MSU community. We can also not help but point out that voice, fairness, and respect can be found among our peer Big Ten institutions as they navigate their own budget challenges. The presidents and provosts of the University of Washington and the University of Oregon and the University of Minnesota's Board of Regents recently hosted question and answer sessions about their budgets and impending cuts. In the Oregon Town Hall, the president and provost announced that work on how to best reduce the budgets of administrative departments by 4% and those of schools and colleges by 2.5% would happen throughout the summer. At the Washington and Oregon events, it was noted that their provosts had previously met with their faculty senate budget committees. Voice, fairness, and respect. At MSU, it is the University Committee on Faculty Affairs that makes recommendations to the faculty senate on issues related to the university budget. We ask UCFA to exercise their voice and inform the faculty of any budget meetings between UCFA and the provost, as well as their own analysis of the data that led to the call for cuts. We ask you, the Board of Trustees, to recognize the Union of Tenure System Faculty. It is not new administrative titles for faculty that are needed at this time. Rather, what is needed are voice, fairness, and respect so that we can work as partners to make MSU better. On behalf of my UTSF colleagues, thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you very much, Rob. Our next speaker is David Hogan, followed by Zara Nassoni. David, are you with us? And I checked, is he on Zoom? Okay, we will move along. Our next speaker is Zara Nassoni. Is Zara on the Zoom list? No? Okay. Our next speaker would be Samuel Burton, if Samuel's identified on the speakers list appearing via Zoom. And then that will be our final speaker, will be Zainab Zokart appearing via Zoom. I believe Zainab is in the list. So, Zainab, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh. Zainab, please begin your comments.
Thank you. Hello, I am a MSU Environmental Engineering student. I would like to read some new names to you. Zain Al-Din Mahmoud Yusuf Shalaya, less than a year old. Malak Abdel Latif Fayez Al-Sheikh Shelfu, less than a year old. Ibrahim Mahmoud Yusuf Shalayel, less than a year old. Al Amira Aisha Mahmoud Ahmed Zarab, yes, less than a year old. Sama Nader Abdel Kadir Al Halu, yes, less than a year old. Yakin Yusuf Sami Al Talibi, less than a year old. Yazahan Shadi Isam Shaf. Yes, less than a year old. Nawal Hisham Hassan Gabin, yes, less than a year old. Tamer Adel Mohsen, less than a year old. It would take me hours to read all the names of those killed by Israel's brutal assault of Gaza. The UN is calling Gaza the deadliest place on earth for children. Hundreds more journalists, aid, and medical workers have been assassinated on an international stage, and yet MSU has played a part in these massacres. MSU's millions invested in weapons companies and the State of Israel have fueled and normalized institutional complicity in civilian slaughter. MSU has an international moral obligation to divest from Israel and weapons manufacturers. I want to be a Spartan, but I am sickened by the university's legacy of support for war criminal technology, whether it is Vietnam or Gaza. This continued war and genocide is killing our people and planet with millions of tons of CO2 released by bombs. It is time for MSU to work toward a livable future and a best. When we look back on this moment, no one will be able to justify the inaction of our institutions to stop this genocide. MSU has the opportunity to become a safe university for those Muslim and Arab students who worriedly text their family members in Yemen, Lebanon, Gaza, Iraq, Iran, and more. MSU needs to take solid and concrete action. It needs to stop arresting protesters calling simply for an end to a genocide. And it needs to stand on the side of humanity before it is too late and no one has stepped up to stop these war crimes. That is all. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Zainab. Trustees, Interim Provost Yaitsko, that concludes public participation on items not germane to the agenda.
Trustees, do I have a motion to adjourn? All in favor?
Is there a second?
There were so many of us.
Any opposed? Abstentions? The motion is accepted. The meeting is adjourned.